in the sky, people in this. Swimming through the waters of Babylon like a rebel fish. Jovelist, specialist, predator and survivalist. Spitting heaven, fire from his lips. Burn the same driver.
Welcome, listeners, to time for an awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. And with all thy getting, get an understanding. Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com, which is the homepage, and listen to the live stream from that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening and catch the live stream there also. You can go to ourradionetwork.com. Again, that's ourradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. That's in the Black Belt. And listen to the live stream there also. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your handheld devices. TuneIn is a free app. And in that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon and you can stream the program live, even into your car if you have the Bluetooth capabilities or an auxiliary connection. Again, that's Time for Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. That's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you always see interesting content being posted daily. And do me a favor, before you leave that page, hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook. And Time for an Awakening Media is there also, full of brand new content, a new podcast of several of the new programs, and also more articles that you can download, listen at later times, even share with your friends. So check it out. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. Tonight, we're scheduled to have a special guest join us. He's been here several times before, and we're always happy to have him come back to share knowledge, wisdom, and understanding with us. Activist, Pan-African scholar, Professor James Smalls is scheduled to join us this evening in conversation. Values to move our people forward, cultural, political, and economics. Ought to be an interesting conversation tonight with Professor Smalls, and we'll be right back to get things started after a brief word from our...
Tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
Not a All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services if when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
What is in 1 million brothers and sisters who are tired of the same old rhetoric, the same old leaders, the same old ways of dealing with political and economic empowerment? If you realize that nobody's going to save black people but us, if you understand that no existing political party prioritizes the best interests of African Americans as a collective, if you believe that leadership is as leadership does, and this means that the best leaders for the black collective must come from the ranks of those who place and hold the best interests of black people foremost and uttermost, if you understand that black people must develop the mindset and the will to finance their own racial uplift organizational efforts, then get involved with 1 million conscious black voters and contributors. The movement is now. Go to www.iamoneofthemillion.com. That's www.iamoneofthemillion.com.
Posted on my wall.
No, it didn't even show up in my news feed.
Man, I'm done with social media. All the injustice and brutality going around, and it's like they're trying to suppress our voice. We're trying to get the message out there, and you can't even share empowerment and what's going on around the country either.
No, don't be dumb with social media, though. It's a tool, and there is a place where we have a voice. It's a Let's Buy Black 365 social network. You do anything you want on any other social network. Post pictures, videos, status updates, share resources and community news. But on Let's Buy Black 365, it's a platform for us and by us to tell our messages.
Whoa, that's like a digital underground railroad.
What's the name of that site again?
It's letsbuyblack365.com.
Yeah, I heard about that. It's all about networking, and you get points, right?
Yeah, the more you network, post, and share, the more points you get. Plus, you get points for posting pictures, sharing information, attending community events, and inviting others to network with you on the app.
Wow, that's all I need to know. I'm gonna go download that app right now.
Now, better yet, let me invite you so I can get some points. It's all about empowerment and solutions, y'all.
Yeah, that's what's up. I'm all in.
Let's do it. Let's share our stories.
Let's buy Black365.com.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And before we get started with our program this evening, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch Street. Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Elliot.
How are you, sir?
Can you hear me? Oh, I'm doing fine.
Brother Richard, this is going to be an interesting conversation with Professor Smalls. There's been a lot going on the past couple of months, and it's always good to have him come on, give his knowledge, wisdom, and insight on the state of our people here in this country. Before we get to Professor Smalls, the Freedom and Reconstruction League had a gathering. You know, I don't know the because I haven't been in touch with them, and that's on me. The health status of one of our great elders here in Philadelphia. Oh boy, I got the paperwork in front of me too about the guest that was at the Freedom and Reconstruction League meeting.
Akil Parker.
Yeah.
Well.
Because I hadn't been in touch with Brother Rob to see about his health conditions, but I still see that the Freedom and Reconstruction League meetings are still going strong. Sister Omalar and some of the folks over there.
Yeah, I was able to attend yesterday, and you know, the dialogue and discussion was really it was really invigorating. And plus, you know, a young brother, Brother Akil Parker, did a presentation, which I think is apropos for now, on David Walker and Mariah Stewart. And I think that, you know, as we get to talk to Bobby Smalls, that's one of the contexts I like to kind of look at, you know, or the topic for tonight in relationship to the formations around 19th century, and then comparing that to our formations now in relationship to our I guess, our political understanding and organizing, and even a philosophical outlook. I think that that's going to be, that's important to kind of look back and on that. And brother Parker, he did a, you know, he's developing his presentation around that. And I think it's helpful. I always use David Walker's Appeal. It's kind of my, like my Bible. I kind of, every year I kind of try to read that, because I thought his speech or his pamphlet was like really powerful then. And for me, it's really powerful now, and speaks to a lot of things that we continue to reiterate and work towards on operationalizing.
You know, Richard, this is just an extension of some of the things that we've been talking about. You had the ASCAC conference here 2-3 weeks ago, the Freedom and Reconstruction League meeting that you attended yesterday, the 10,000 men gathering down in Washington that happened for 5 days. It's a lot going on around the country among our people if we look and see what's happening. If we're unconscious, then maybe somebody needs to shake you and wake you up. But if you're looking to see what's happening, it's a lot of things happening. And our people need to be involved in things that's going to change our paradigm. I want to welcome in our guest, activist and Pan-African scholar, Professor James Smalls, is with us. Professor Smalls, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Loud and clear. I'm so happy to have you back with us, myself and Brother Richard.
How you doing, Bobby Smalls?
I'm good, sir. I'm good, brother. Just glad to be back with you.
Professor Smalls, before we get started with our conversation this evening, because we're going to be delving into a lot of different topics, you know, values to move our people forward, to cultural, political, and economics. But before we do that, myself and Richard was talking, and I know Richard wants to jump in on this. You know, you do a lot of moving around, even at the age that you are. Moving around. When I talked with you 2 weeks ago, you were in Tampa. You were down at the gathering, the 10,000 men gathering for 5 days down in D.C. It's a lot of things going on. Things been happening here in Philadelphia. What is the finger on the pulse of our people? What, from your knowledge base, because you've spanned the gamut here, you've touched a lot of different generations, from Asa Hilliard, Dr. Ben, Dr. Clark. I mean, you walk with Kwame Ture, H. Rapp Brown, in a political end. You was even involved with Adam Clayton Powell. So you span decades of think tanks.
Oh, come on now, stop that.
You have spanned decades of a knowledge base of our people. Looking at things going on now, how do you see the state of our people?
Well, the same crisis that befell us 30, 40 years ago still befell us now. We, you know, a lot of times the organizers in our community with the best skills and intention fail to realize how big our community is and how diverse that community is. We're talking about somewhere between 60 and 80 million people, and probably closer to 80 million, because no one has ever taken a census of the African-American community on the real side. So we don't know how many people we have. We know it's above 60 million. And we are scattered across one of the largest countries in the world. You know, we think, when we're in America, we think of it as America. But when you're talking about the spans from there, Canadian border to the Gulf of Mexico, from the Atlantic Ocean to the Pacific Ocean, you're talking about a very large country. And the African people that live here, we're as culturally diverse in our regional separations as we are on the continent of Africa and the 54 nations. But we try to treat ourselves like we're an organization, and a small one.
Okay.
And we fail to take into account the vast diversity of the African-American community, meaning the economic diversity, the regional cultural diversity, the historical diversity, the religious diversity especially, when we try to educate and organize them. And I think that's where many of us will have to make our adjustments. And so we tend to speak as though everybody really understand where we're coming from, you know?
You
even
know,
in the Christian community, which is about 90% of our people, the diversity there is so acute that the Baptist African Americans don't really communicate with the Methodist African Americans. Mm-hmm. And the Methodist African Americans don't really communicate with the African Methodist Episcopal African Americans. And then they don't communicate with the Jehovah's Witness or the Seventh-day Adventist. And so we've got this fractionalization of our people at the most critical level. Religion and spiritual things is the most critical aspect of a human being's existence. And if you're fractured there, then you're fractured. And then when we come to the economic caste class, and this caste thing in our community have been going on since the turn of the 20th century, and we had access to universities and professions like medicine and dental and law, the first thing that occurred was the formation of the Boulé at the turn of the 20th century. And the Boulé was a formulation of the black educated intellectual and elite to create a niche for themselves that allowed them to be in a caste class position separate from the masses of their people in an imitation of the white community, which had rejected them. And so that has grown. So now if you're in one of the sororities or one of the fraternities, you have a relationship with people in your sorority, but you don't have relationship with people in another sorority. You have relationship with people in your fraternity, but no relationship to people in another fraternity. And then those sororities and fraternities don't really have a relationship to the grassroots element of the community, except in their occasional philanthropic appeal, which is limited. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Oh, most definitely, I understand.
Okay. So the key is going to be, how do we communicate the kinds of information that we try to communicate, economic unity, political unity, and cultural unity, across these fractured abyss that makes up the African-American community? We even are confused about what to call ourselves. There's a group that says, well, we are Hebrew Israelites. And then there's another group saying we are Moors, and they argue with each other. Then you got the group who now saying that we are Aborigines, and you know, and they argue with those of us who say we are African Americans, and we haven't got that together. So when you look at a Chinese community, they may be Mandarin and Cantonese and a bunch of other things, but they understand clearly that they unite around this being Chinese, okay? And the same thing, you got the Vietnamese community. Just came into this country some 20-something years ago. But they've organized economic, political, and real estate pockets all over America where they are so that they've recreated their world and their sovereignty right here in America without asking anybody's permission. To ask anybody for sovereignty is an insanity to start with. You don't ask permission for sovereignty. You practice sovereignty in an economic, political, and a cultural relationship to one another. But you arrive at that place through an acceptance of a common history, a common condition, a common ancestry. And we haven't arrived at that place yet. Most of us don't even know basic African-American history.
Richard, jump in here before I go ahead.
I wanted to ask you, Father Smalls, what is and how you frame that cultural diversity and the diversity we have. Is it a issue around not being able to project the correct vision, or is it an issue around that we haven't been able to negotiate with these different segments and find some commonality to create that relationship with.
But I think the second is probably more real. We have not been able to negotiate with these fractured pieces, with the fragments. Most brothers and sisters who are in the nationalist community have little or nothing to do with or never make an appeal to those who are in the larger Christian community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we just assume they're not going to even listen to us, so that we don't make an appeal. We don't give out our flyers at church or church affairs. Yet the people we say we want to transform are those very people.
And with that said, if I may push that, because when you're negotiating, you usually a representative goes to another representative with something and try to make some create some agreement. Is it that even with the, and specifically thinking of the nationalist community or Pan-Africanist community, do we have something to negotiate with? One, do we have a representative that speaks for this general cultural position? And then two, do we have something specifically that we can negotiate, say, with the Christian community or the Hebrew Israelite community, that we can try to find some that they have and we have that we can make some agreement out of?
Well, we have no more or no less leadership than any of those other communities. Mm-hmm. They haven't centralized their leadership either. You don't have a center. You have a Black Baptist convention, but their influence over the larger Baptist masses is limited. You have a Methodist conference, but again, it's limited. The Hebrew community is the same. They come together around holidays, but they don't seem to have a central leadership element. Same thing in the nationalist or Pan-African community. We have our own intra-divisions between socialism and Marxism general capitalism and so forth. And so these are the things that needs to be addressed when we have conferences, because we need to make the goal clear. I'm going to use the term sovereignty a little bit, because when I went to the conference in Tampa, a couple of weeks ago, I didn't really know until a couple of weeks before it was about the question of sovereignty.
Okay.
And so I tried to address that question of sovereignty. A sovereign people make themselves sovereign. You don't appeal to another people to give you sovereignty. That's the first mistake those who are talking about sovereignty is making. And sovereignty isn't a question of an ethnic identity. Sovereignty is the question of controlling the economics, politics, and culture where you live, owning the real estate where you live, running the retail and wholesale businesses where you live. If you establish ownership of real estate, then establish ownership of the retail and wholesale business where you live. You are sovereign. You don't need nobody's permission to spend your money or make money. Right now, we don't understand what makes a people a people. We think the color of our skin. And that can't work very much, because we have every color on the damn spectrum when we talk about ourselves. And so what we have is a label called African American, which is a good label. It's actually the appropriate label. America is a geopolitical place. We live here, we work here, we pay tax here, we vote here. And Africa is our race and our cultural heritage. So that's not inappropriate to label ourselves that way. But it is just a label. Right now, we haven't said, what does that label mean? What defines that label? And that comes from an understanding of your history and your heritage. And that's where we have not sat down and says, okay, what is the common history and the common heritage that bond us together? Pass the label. The label is good. You need the label. But you have to go past the label. You know, what makes me want to be with you two, brother? What makes me feel bonded to you? And the thing that makes me feel bonded to you and a part of you, and knowing that you are part of me, is our ancestral experiences, which we call our history.
Yes.
And yet our general population know little or nothing about African-American history, let alone African history, because every major attempt we tried to do to get it into the universities and into the schools over the last 30 years have either fizzled or failed. We established it for a while, and it ran for about 20 years, and then the enemy came at us using every weapon available, including our own brothers and sisters who are gay. Instead of establishing their gay department, they decide, let's go destroy the Africana departments and take them over. While working in the partnership with our enemies. And so that has created a rift that's tearing us apart. And at the level of the elementary school and junior high school, where in the 70s, many of them had African studies as a part of the general curricula, most of them no longer do. So the black child is going into a white school in the same way today as he did in the 1940s and the 1930s in terms of what's in a social studies book, in terms of the curricular impact on the child's psyche, in terms of what is given to them as world history or global history. So we're still getting the history of the imperialists and the colonialists interpreting our relationship to them and their relationship to us. And that's always not in our favor. It's never the truth. But it tends to be the thing that socializes the consciousness of our young people as they move into adulthood and begin to try to navigate this world as an adult with information that is inappropriate for success. As a human being, they may be successful in terms of getting a job that pays $60,000 or $100,000, but as a human being that belongs to a particular community that can give them the protection and the safety and allow them to socialize their children for future progress, we haven't achieved that. We don't even have that as our goal. Because a concept called integration was introduced to us by our white liberal allies when we were fighting to desegregate. They changed the agenda because they were putting funds into our movement.
we
abandoned black institutions to ally ourselves with white institutions, and we lost our financial foundation.
We talked about some of those things last week on the program, Dr. Smalls, with a sister that wrote the book Black Integration, A Failed Social Experiment. But Dr. Smalls, you mentioned a couple of things, and I want to kind of go back because you talked about this. Well, I'm throwing it in there about the skill to be able to organize. And I really see that as a skill. When you got a lot of people fractured into different areas. And that's why when I see, and I'll use Malik Shabazz's gathering in Washington a couple of days ago. In fact, it ended today as an example. For a man that's a Pan-Africanist and a Muslim to be able to organize people from different faith backgrounds and have them speak at an event is a skill in itself. I think we're going to need more of that type of person to be able to bridge these gaps. Religion to me, and I want you to talk about this because we're going to be talking about several different things, cultural, political, and economics. But religion to me has been a huge stumbling block for our people, especially here in the diaspora in the United States, because of the Europeanized Christianity that was introduced to us.
It's not Europeanized Christianity.
Go ahead.
Christianity is European culture.
Okay. Okay.
So we got to call these religions a culture.
Okay.
And they're European cultures. Islam is Arabic culture. Elijah Muhammad is the only one that I know of that has created an Islam outside of certain segments of West Africa that is based on black culture.
Okay.
So we've got to be clear what the religions are. They're an instrument of white culture and an instrument of Arab culture, you know, because they impart values, principles, concepts, and ideas that allow you to favor one set of behavior versus another. That's culture.
Okay. All right. Now let me throw this in because I want you to help me with
but
this.
But let me just finish answer that.
Go ahead.
It takes a special kind of person, this organizing skill. I don't think we have any shortage of good organizers. I think what we have is a misunderstanding of the goal.
Okay.
You know, the goal has to be to organize the whole black people, yet realizing that you're never going to get the whole people, but that has to be your goal. And in doing so, you must recognize the diversity in that people. Because we can't just organize and say, those of us who are Pan-Africanists come together, a building with 100 chairs, we probably wouldn't fill that up. Okay, when we're talking, but we're talking about the salvation of 60 to 80 million people. Where do these people go on Sunday to have their belief reinforced? They don't go to a Pan-African meeting. They go to a church.
Mm-hmm.
The other segment, the other 10%, go to a mosque, and the instrument that's instructing them comes out of the cultures of people who have practiced genocide on us for thousands of years. So the Quran, you got 1,500 years of enslavement and genocide in Africa before we even meet Christopher Columbus. Okay, and then we get to Christianity, and we've got another right now 1,000+, close when you take in North Africa, close to 2,000 years of genocide, death and mayhem being practiced in the name of that religion on us, and yet we have, having been forced into it, we are now using it to interpret our reality. That's impossible. You'll never win at that. For millions of years, we were Africans before we met any of these instruments, and yet we have agreed in silence to accept the discarding millions of years of experiences on how to organize your character, how to organize your family, how to organize a neighborhood, how to organize a community, how to organize a nation. We had millions of years of how to do that as an African, and yet we've rejected that body of knowledge. We don't look to that body of knowledge to restructure and reorganize ourselves as human beings in communities and families around the world. Because we're using someone else's methodology, someone else's instrument, and not just someone else's instrument, but an instrument that was used to practice genocide on us. We're now using that same instrument, and we are practicing psychological genocide on ourselves, spiritual genocide on ourselves, cultural genocide on ourselves. And if you don't believe this, just look in the prison. Look at who's addicted to drugs. Look at who's alcoholics. Look at who's committing molestation against our female children across our communities, and you'll see these are the people who are informed and instructed by the spiritual and religious system of those who once practiced genocide on us using those systems.
You know,
understand
what
I'm saying?
Yes, I understand clearly. But go ahead, Richard. Go ahead.
I was wondering as you're saying this, I appreciate you're saying to your wisdom and experience that history should be as it's always been our best teacher, right? When the formation say of the conventions of 72 in Gary or 68 in Philadelphia, and then we go into the 19th century about the conventions of the Negro conventions that were held. Did they have a better sense of that going across these different fractions in relationship to bringing the different, respecting those different cultural formations?
They seem to have had a better sense. I don't think they had a good enough sense because they left the African element out of the component.
Mm-hmm.
They were trying to organize as white people in blackface, and that's what we're still doing today. It can't happen. It doesn't work. You don't see it working in any other community in the world. Every other ethnic nation, the Koreans organize based on them being Koreans, informed by their culture and their history. Japanese organized on, based on being Japanese, informed and instructed by their culture and their history. Chinese organized being Chinese, being instructed and informed by their history. Irishmen organized to be Irishmen based on being instructed and informed by their history. Germans organized to be Germans based on instructed and informed by their history. Italian organized to be Italians. We are trying to organize to be African based on the instructions of white people, European history. Can't work. It doesn't work. With all of the degrees we've got, with us in the last 4 years earning and spending more than $1 trillion, and our condition hasn't changed in the, no more in the last 50 years, something's wrong with the picture. Oh, y'all got stuff for one. My granddaughter just came downstairs. She was sitting upstairs making herself some slippers out of cardboard. You wouldn't believe what my beautiful little baby have done. Congratulations. She's all of 7 years old. Those are beautiful girl.
Which shows our creative, it shows our creative ability to do just as what you said.
Yeah, so come back to where we are. And it seems so far-fetched because Dr. Wade Nobles have written a book. His last book is called The Island of Meme. M-E-M-E. And in The Island of Meme, what he's discussing is how European values and culture have so structured and organized our mind to self-destruct that even when things African is introduced to that mind, to our salvation, it is our own mind and what has been planted as the European mental meme that begins to attack our own attempt at our own salvation. So we need to really study deeply the impact of European culture. And don't confuse culture for theater and movies and bands and singing and dancing. Those are tools of culture. Those tools are there to demonstrate and to impact ideas and principles. Culture is a set of ideas on how to view the world and how to view yourself as a human being in the world and how to view your behavior as a human being one towards the other. That's what culture is, all right? Dancing and music and other things simply implement those ideas and embed those ideas and perpetuate those ideas.
Dr. Smalls, let me, because I want to throw these things out here so you can talk about them. You know, when you're talking about looking at these situations, and especially dealing with the belief systems that our people find themselves in, then you're talking about critical thinking and us using critical thinking to analyze our situation. Now, to be honest, if we use critical thinking, then a lot of these religions that we practice, we wouldn't be practicing at all. But
even if we use critical thinking,
go ahead,
we would fail. Because we are not informed by African instruments.
Okay.
We're not informed by African information. In order to be critical in our thinking as Africans, and when we're thinking about Africans and the transformation of the African person, we must have the African information in the pot. Right now, we're trying to do critical thinking, and the only information in the pot is the European information.
Well, listen, and I'm glad that you mentioned that because I'm gonna throw something at you, and being your years of experience and study, answer this for me, because I don't see our people as a whole. Now, I'm using us as a collective, if there is such a term, holding anything as sacred. And when I say sacred, I'm talking about, for example, if a black man is a Christian, then either in his mind or on his person, you'll see a cross. If I'm a Muslim, either in my mind or on my person, you'll see a crescent with a star. Mm-hmm. If I call myself a Hebrew, you'll see a six-pointed star, what they call a Star of David, Shield of David, on my in my mind or in on my person. Those symbols that we hold sacred may or may not have anything to do with us. What, from your years of study, what symbol should we hold as sacred?
We have many of them. If we wanted to use one of those icons, we've got the Ankh out of ancient Kemet. We've got the Jinyami, the symbol for God, out of the ancient Akan tradition in Ghana. And we've got others from Congo to South Africa.
Well, would you say...
Go ahead. But most of those people who are wearing the crescent or the cross or the Mogan David, the Star of David, none of them behave in a manner that one would consider appropriate to the instructions of those written traditions they claim they represent. So the symbols simply become an iconic way of rejecting things African. They certainly can't say, with the murder and the mayhem in America, not only on American citizens, but on the rest of the world, being condoned by all of the cross wearers can be considered to be Christian behavior based on what the Bible say Christian behavior is. And the same thing go for the Hebrew Israelites. I haven't seen one of them standing up for the Palestinians against the atrocities of the Ashkenazis and Sephardims and other Europeans are committing in the Middle East. So they can't say they stand for what Moses supposedly, mythically or otherwise, presented to them as a law of humanity. And certainly what's in the Quran that is supposed to be the instruction for the human behavior of a Muslim, I haven't seen a Muslim in years, you know, people blowing up children and women in villages and others cutting oil deal and other kinds of a deal with America to keep their people in suffering and calling themselves the king this and the prince this and the others flying bombs with American planes to destroy the people of Yemen. These aren't Muslims, though they wear the symbol of Islam. These people in America are not really Christians, not based on what the document said a Christian is. So I don't know if just by wearing that symbol, it would make us any more human than them wearing those symbols have made them. I think what will make us the human being we need to be, we need to understand the history and the ancestral humanity out of which we come.
Okay.
Which says okay. that, you know, as Brother Ellie brought the question up and your response brings that we would have, and I want you to correct me if I'm wrong, we would have to make our own history sacred, just our particular
that,
history.
That is the only thing you've got that is sacred.
Okay. Okay.
That is your lineage.
Okay.
That is the word escaped me. But that is the record of your DNA.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? Each one of us, each one of us is the sum total of all of the genes of all of our ancestors going back millions of years. That's what each human being is. We are the best of those genes when we were given birth to, and the latest and most highest tech version of those genes. But if we don't know the lineage that produced those genes, we don't know the behavior that produced those genes. We don't know the values and the belief system that produced those genes. How can we reach inside of ourselves and behave in a manner that is appropriate to even the health of those genes?
Hmm. I agree.
And you know that this is true because you've never been to a classroom in America where white folks ain't teaching their history. And you won't go to one in China where Chinese folks isn't teaching their history. The only time history becomes a question is when the Africans who have been conquered over the last 2,000 years throughout the continent and here in the Western Hemisphere by white folks, when we ask to teach our history, when we attempt to teach our history, Because knowing your history is the only way you're going to establish who have historically been your friends and who have historically been your enemies.
Yes.
Because that will tell you who is potentially your friend in the future and who's potentially your enemy in the future. And it will certainly define your friends and enemies now. Only history can do that.
And you know, Baba Smalls, the thing I as a volunteer tour guide at the African American Museum in Philadelphia, last week I had a group of students from Boston University there. And in bringing up the point about the importance of history, what I asked was how many knew the genealogy of their family as individuals? And I asked them to raise their hand. And it was interesting to hopefully to make the point that you're making. None of them did.
Right. And that was the answer I was just going to give you. None of them did. And if you ever listen to my lecture, I told them the first history you must master is the history of your family tree.
And for us, it would, as you say, it seems that even, I mean, any African in North America or in the diaspora, if we just dealt with our personal family history, we have to come back to the African history in general, because
absolutely
all of us, regardless of what we are now, all of us came out of that experience.
Yes, absolutely. There is no way to establish yourself as a people. We call ourselves the black people. We have no real reason to call ourselves a people because we are not a people.
I agree.
We are not a people. We are here, this conglomerate with a label on it, but we don't have any of the ingredients at work that makes us a people in any large manner. We have small units of us that are doing things that we can say would make a group of people, but I doubt if any of those groups would be larger than 1,000 or two, okay? And so when we're talking of 60 million people, there we have nothing that defines us as a people besides the label, and a label is not enough to define your peoplehood. You must have a lineage. You must have a lineage, because the lineage shows your relationship and your belonging to one another. And that lineage can only be established through your history.
And, well, you know, if I may push it, Elliot, excuse me, I just wanted to add this. I think it's important because in that group, it was one sister that was, for some reason it came up, and I asked her where she was from, and she said, Nigeria. And I doing the talk, and I said, okay, you're a Nigerian. But to show the specificity of it, I said, well, what people do you come from? And she said, Yoruba, which I had to show them that it's not just having a broader identifier, but Yoruba is the ethnic identifier specifically to their people. And that's the point that you're making, which
and
makes
even
a
that
more
child
population.
Probably know little or nothing about Yoruba history.
Yeah.
Otherwise,
uh-oh,
she wouldn't be here. She'd be there. Yeah.
I ain't touching that.
I have to, and I do all the time, because to say I'm Igbo, and I ask, what is that, when most Igbos are Christians, and your country is in total confusion, and you over here in America trying to tell black American what relationship we should have to white people who have been working a genocide on us for 400 years, and because you want to have a relationship with those white people, you can't define yourself in my historical context, so you reject me trying to have my history. That's to my brothers and sisters from abroad. Not all of them, but 99% of them.
Right.
Because I have to be clear. No more time for games. You know, we've been played out of pocket by everybody. You know,
so
we are African Americans. We were enslaved in this nation. Next year, it'll be 400 years. We built this nation without being compensated for it. We've been genocided for 400 years, and it's still being genocided today. Yet no African nation has opened its door for our return. No African diplomats speak out on our behalf in the world bodies, from the UN to The Hague or whatever. And most of 99% of the African nationals who migrate to America do not want to have us define what relationship between black folks and white people are, even though we are the host majority black population and they only have opportunities to express themselves in the colleges and other things because of the struggle that we've committed. This all gets rejected in order to partner with white people who their attitude towards is not based on our experience, but based on their experience in Africa, where, for the most part, white supremacy and white dominance mentally is even more destructively impacting than it is on us here in the United States. Just wearing a piece of kente cloth don't make you African. Even speaking an indigenous African language is not what makes you African. Because you speak an indigenous African language, you wear a piece of kente cloth, but you worship a white god, you reject your indigenous religion, you reject your ancestral history. Matter of fact, you don't even know that history because colonialism has blocked it out. So we've got to be honest and be real if we have to be victorious in the end. Because that's the war we're in right now. It is a war for the African mind and the African soul. And it can only be achieved with a transformation of the African spirit. And that can only happen if it's informed and instructed by the history of its ancestors.
We're going to take a brief break. And when we come back, you can get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Activist, Pan-African scholar, Professor James Smalls is with us. Get involved in the conversation. When we come back, Dr. Smalls, I want to play a clip from the representative that was there from South Africa at the 10 million.
Oh, that brother was beautiful.
I want to play a clip and get your perspective on it. But we'll be right back.
You're listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
I transformed a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one of the tangible transformations I've created for entrepreneurs in various industries around the country. If this isn't what you think of when you think of accounting and business consulting, then get ready to take down this invaluable information. Are you an entrepreneur suffering with a stagnating company? Have headache customers, staff, or vendors? Are you rebounding from a loss and need help achieving your unrealized potential? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? Hi, my name is Nataki Kanban. If you're ready to go beyond advising and coaching and get results, then call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions recommend and implement the best comprehensive sales, administrative, human resources, accounting, and operations to help you grow into your vision for yourself and your company. Again, from anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072 or pull us up on your device right now and book your free consultation at www.newbusinesssolutions.com. And just mention you heard this special announcement on Time for an Awakening.
Bobby, hit me, DVD, the garbage, man. You walk after that water, man.
Yeah.
Speak to him, Lord.
Somewhere, a black man's eyes wells up in the dark. Away from his peers. Away from his queen. Away from his offspring.
That's right.
Coming to a fork in the road and not realizing that he cannot stand still. Cause sometimes life isn't about right or wrong, just left or right.
Gotta keep it moving.
The stress, the pressure, the respect of your woman, the admiration of your child. Almost obsolete as the breadwinner when the flower is provided by the enemy. If your only resource is labor, or at least that's what they'll pay for.
Slavery, God.
What happens when they could get it for cheaper?
Man up.
Have we got an amnesia as to what a man is and what a man does?
Like power.
Is the possibility of death too great? Is the fear of physical confinement hindering your proper judgment?
I just got locked up last week.
See, death is a guarantee. And you might just get knocked just because.
That's word.
Now, your woman condescends, cause she just can't understand how she could get a job, but you cannot.
Gotta create our own job.
And look at the places you go, and the people you fraternize with, cause they say a lot about your character.
Only road with this
and whether you are who you say you are.
Soldier.
White supremacy has struck a deadly blow, but our vital signs persist. When we know better, an excuse is just an excuse.
Hurry up, stop talking.
And whether you fully comprehend or not,
Lord,
you're a man.
Stand up, let them know, Lord.
And manhood is your birthright.
Stand up.
It is your job to know what that entails, black man.
Stand up.
And it cannot be defined by our natural adversary.
Stand up.
For his ways are not ours. Do we allow our boys to be feminized?
Hell no.
Do we allow our girls to be masculinized?
Hell no.
Because sheep get on the defensive? Or do we muster manhood and stand firm on our principles?
Staying strong, Lord.
I leave that up to you, brother.
Casket drop.
But as you dry your face and contemplate your next move, keep in mind that devils love doubt.
Yeah.
And if you don't know how to be a man, they will show you how.
It's wartime.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. We're joined in conversation this evening with activist Pan-African scholar Professor James Smalls is with us in conversation. You can get involved too by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Let's go right to the, you know, I was going to play that clip, Professor Smalls, but I'm going to do it. But let me take a couple of these callers that's been waiting patiently.
Okay.
Let's go to 225-225. What's your name? Where you calling from? 225?
Yes.
Yes, what's your name? Where you calling from?
Well, my name is James. I didn't know I was on, but okay, I can speak.
Go ahead.
My question Dr. Smalls, Robert Sibukwe of the Pan-Africanist Congress, he talked about resolving some of the identity conflict in Africa with the definition of an African based upon love of the land. And it sounds like, you know, when you talk about this preservation of the lineage, it sounds like that Sibukwe's notion might be useful. And the final thing, at the 50th commemoration of the assassination of Dr. King the other day, the presiding bishop of the Church of God in Christ, he called for a pan-Africanism, and I'm just wondering what you would think about something like that.
Well, I agree with both. I didn't know the bishop had made that call, but I would certainly be one of the persons who would answer that call and help promote that with him, because that's what I'm talking about, bringing these different fragmented pieces together across our Christian community, our Muslim community, our Hebrew Israelite community, our so-called conscious community, together, coming together to work out what is our goal in order to first define our peoplehood and our human beingness. And then, what then is our political goal as a people, our cultural goals as a people, and our economic goals as a people? And as far as Sobukwe is concerned, he was one of my great heroes. I was always, from my earliest days, a supporter of the PAC and their program and their approach. I think the concept of the land is one way of tying our identity together, but there's also a value system, that is articulated in the history of the African people.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
If someone who says, I'm Yoruba, if you take it out of the Yoruba language, instead of saying, Shango, let's say, courage within a human being to transform themselves, instead of saying, Oya, let's say the process of change that comes once one gets the courage to change, or in, say, Ogun, I don't understand. I speak English, but if I translate it in English, it means transformation as a result of the change that comes from the courage to change. So that's a set of principles that is universal to Africa and to African peoples. I can go to the Congo and find the same principles. I can go to South Africa and find the same principles. Though they're speaking different language, they're articulating the same principles of what is our relationship to nature, to cosmology, to other human beings and other living things within our ecology. That's what our system derived. It derived an explanation, but that explanation is planted and rooted in our history, which is lost to our examination when we look for conflict resolutions in our lives and our world. We are forced to turn to the Eurasian conflict resolution instruments, and almost all of them lead to war. So what is it that's in the African realm that will teach a human being how to be human? That's what I'm taught. That's where our identity lies. And in all African language, there's a word, their word for God tends to say every and all things at once, or the totality of creation being divinity and us simply being an aspect of that. And our lives is about emulating and then imitating that thing that we call divinity. And there's a set of principles that go with defining that. That's African culture that you can derive from African history, which comes out of African experiences with ecology, cosmology, environment, and interaction with other human beings.
Doctor, I would just say, for purposes of this conversation, it may not be appropriate, but there is a framework that articulates basically a Black ontology, methodology, epistemology, and axiology, and cosmology and teleology that addresses precisely what you're saying. In other words, it is possible to articulate precisely what you're saying. In fact, the one simple formula for it is the notion of liberty and justice for all. That when you look at African peoples, or for that matter, any Black peoples, and I mean by Black any people who prefer life to death, when you look at any Black people anywhere in the world, their fundamental ethos is this notion of preferring life to death, and therefore that has implications ecologically, that has implications sociologically, that has implications axiologically, et cetera. But I won't go on further.
But I want you to know I agree with you 100%. You made it so simple, you know.
If you were to leave a way, an email or something that I can reach you, I'd love to send you this, because I think this can make it plain, and the things that you're talking about, will enable you to move that ball, because I think that the fundamental problem is communicating to people what the problem is.
Yes, sir, I agree with you.
What's your name, brother?
My name is Pugh, James Pugh. I'm a philosopher in Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Pugh, do me a favor.
You got a good name. I'm James Small. That James thing is a good name. You know, it's English. We know that all language derived from Africa. Let's make sure we get that clear, too. Even the English language, which comes out of the Germanic structure, would have, according to linguists, would have to find its way back into Ethiopia and Sudan.
Brother Pugh, can you send me that article that you said about the bishop that stated that Pan-African?
I would say this. Just go on C-SPAN and look for the 50th commemoration of MLK, and there's going to be a tape there for the 45-minute. He did the keynote presentation.
Okay.
And so there will be a 45-minute presentation. By the way, there's another guy who spoke there, too. He was one of the advisors to Dr. King, and I believe his name was James Lawson.
He talks about
changing the paradigm, the political paradigm, and I think he's somebody who was at that conference. So there are any number of people, but those are two people certainly who would be interesting to listen to.
Thank you for your input, brother.
Thank you so much, my brother, and I'm going to make sure I leave my how should I let the brother know my email?
You can just tell him. In fact, you'll probably say it two, three times before we leave.
Right now, it's Amponsa3, AMPONS, like Sam, SA3@gmail.com. AMPONSA3@gmail.com.
AMPONSA3@gmail.com. Okay, got you.
All right.
Thank you, brother.
Okay.
Let's go to four.
And if before you go to the next call, what Brother James just raised, Brothers Baba Smalls, isn't that something that the representatives of these different groups would have to understand and communicate with each other, maybe to negotiate with each other?
You have to come up with what is the goal?
Mm-hmm.
What is the goal? First, we have to establish what makes us a people, what binds us together that we can reference on any occasion we need to. What makes me belong to you and you belong to me? And then we address the other three criticals: economic, politics, and culture. At the core of your culture is your spiritual system.
Yes.
And so Brother James has laid out some nice, I can't wait to hear from how he has put it in context. And I will do my best to learn from his context and try to articulate it. But what we're saying is simply this: a people must be able to establish what makes them a people so that their peopleness is not in question when they're having a discussion. And once you have established your peopleness and your human beingness and what allows you to belong to one another, then you can establish what is the goals of these people economically, politically, and culturally.
Let's go to 404. 404. What's your name? Where are you calling from? 404? 404? Let's put 404 back on hold. Let's go to 267. 267?
Yes. Good evening, Professor Smalls.
Good evening, sir. Good evening.
And good evening, Brother Elliot. And how are you, sir?
How are you, sir?
Good, good, good. Professor Smalls, the last time I saw you was at the DF conference in the 90s, and you were just as mild-mannered and mellow and give such a good understanding with your conversations that bring us to our culture and what we should be knowing and studying. And I'm going to say this to you, sir, that you broke it down so very well how the fraternities should be more together, the religious organizations should be more together, our communities should be more together as a people.
Yes, sir.
And I'm going to tell you that, sir, that the last conversation that I've had with Elliot and Richard was on the subject of integration. It's one thing if we're together and we're working together. It's another thing if we're facing the enemy of integration. And my question to you, sir, that in the definition of integration, it brings me to, and Elijah Muhammad has a chapter on King on integration as an integrationist. Would you classify and categorize Du Bois and Martin Luther King as integrationists?
No, I wouldn't call either of them integrationists. I thought Dr. King was fighting for desegregation. He was fighting for equality in the midst of the realm of a nation state called the United States of America. Those people, our so-called left-wing allies, who was so-called assisting us in our struggle with their media, began to frame our struggle as one for integration without ever defining outright what that was, but allowing it to be generally defined as becoming a part of things white, institutions that were white, becoming a part of the white world. And what that meant, without ever being articulated, is an abandonment of the black world, abandoning the black businesses support, abandoning the black economic structure, abandoning the black social institutions, even abandoning the black social clubs like the jazz clubs and the other things to go and participate with white in their similar institutions as a partner with your wealth. And that's what we did. And look at us now.
Okay, sir. So my question to you is that I think when King was speaking, that when he was talking about having equality, he wasn't saying to abandon your businesses, the places, schools in which
that's
you
why work. I won't call him an integrationist. He was talking about equality. Chinese have equality in America, and they didn't abandon Chinatown.
Okay, so as a result, why aren't the businesses, the schools, and the institutions in our community? What has happened?
Because we articulated an ideology called integration. It got articulated in the media. It got articulated in the dialogue. It got articulated in the language. You never saw any other community in America, not the Latino community, not the Asian community, not the Eastern European community. None of them has ever articulated a social philosophy of integration. That was only articulated for the African-American community, and we bought into that. We bought into it, and it meant an abandonment of the black community, and history of the last 40 years bears that out.
Okay, sir. Well, I guess I have to reread the chapter from the Message to the Black Man where Elijah Muhammad is calling Martin Luther King an integration. Now,
you know, I love all of our great leaders, and no one praised the Honorable Elijah Muhammad more than me except Minister Farrakhan, but none of our great leaders were perfect. They did the best they could. They called the shots like they was. I consider myself a disciple of Malcolm, but Malcolm made errors and made mistakes. But his correct analysis outshined those errors and those mistakes. We've got to look over the experience of our ancestors and take the best of what they gave us and try to figure out what is the most appropriate of the teachings they give and go forward with it. And what is no longer useful for us today or wasn't a correct analysis of yesterday, we must abandon it and move forward.
Professor Smalls, like I saw you so many years ago in the 90s,
yes,
your information you give me to help me think more critically is making me better as a thinker, and I appreciate that. And Brother Richard,
I thank you for bringing that forward, because this issue of integration and what it has meant and what our people intended it for it to mean. I think what Dr. King intended it for it to mean is not what has occurred. Okay?
Okay.
I think what he was talking about was equality in a nation state where I pay taxes just like you, where I vote just like you, where I'm born into as a citizen just like you. There should be no restrictions for me that doesn't apply to you, or no exclusivity for you that don't apply to me. Now, what the white press and the white banking structure who wanted to get control of that multi-billion dollar African-American surplus capital did was to use their intellectual science to create another sociology around how that should be interpreted, and it has proven to be detrimental for our community.
Wow. Richard, we were just talking about that.
Richard, I forgot to mention your name. Professor Smalls, I hope you come on again. There's some more questions I have to ask you. I need to clarify by studying my history if I'm understanding it right. So thank you for putting me on the right track to make me see things more clearly.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you for your call.
You know, brother.
You're pretty clear. It's just that we just have to study a little deeper what was our intent. You know, all content has intent. Now, what was our intent when we were advancing our content? And what was our enemy's intent when they advanced their content around the question of integration?
Okay, thank you, sir.
Thank you, for your call, brother.
What you just spoke to, you and just spoke to, was something
that I see.
Yes. Just seen going on in Philadelphia. Recently, they just put up a statue of Octavius V. Cato. And from the time that the authors wrote the book, they've been calling him a civil rights leader. And then recently, it's a professor out at Villanova, kind of, because now this is a thing in Pennsylvania where they're honoring him. The mayor, you know, the white mayor actually pushed for the statue to be built, right? And every time I noticed in the public forum, I said, well, I mean, he wasn't a civil right. He was a member of an equal rights league, not a civil rights league. He didn't
right.
They didn't want equal. They didn't want civil rights. They wanted equal rights.
Right.
And but the narrative is pushing.
Our civil rights, see, they played us with those words, right?
Mm-hmm.
Once you're born in the nation, your civil rights is supposed to be guaranteed by the government. Right. You don't have to ask for that. If it's not being honored, then the question of equal rights become the only dialogue. Let me say that again. Your civil rights is guaranteed by your birth. If the state is not enforcing that when somebody violates that, then it is a question of equal rights, because someone else who's born in the same state is getting those same civil rights and is not being violated. So if yours is being violated, it's not a question of civil rights, because it's already yours.
Right.
It is a question of equal rights under the law. And if you listen to the dialogue of Thurgood Marshall and other of our people, they were talking about equal rights under the law.
And that's about changing, I mean, even because they're writing curriculum around this, conditioning another generation to not even acknowledge that they're already, compared to recognizing that they have entitlement to the, you know, just by being born in the nation state. I just wanted to equal, you know,
give you the real life example. Nullifies the 14th Amendment. And I hear some of our brothers and sisters saying that we're one fifth of a man. There's nothing in the Constitution that say black people were one fifth of a man. They said that black people in the South who was in the slave economy would be count as one-fifth for the purposes of taxes on that particular economy, because given their agricultural superiority and the large number of enslaved Africans in that area, they would always have the upper hand in voting against the northern states. People in the northern states was not counted. The blacks in the northern states were not counted as one-fifth. So we let people play us, and then we began to play ourselves. You understand?
Yes, sir.
According to the Constitution of the United States, every African born in this country, long before there was a civil war, was already a citizen of this nation according to its constitution. If that wasn't recognized, it means the very nation itself was in violation of the human rights of its own population whose skin happened to be black. So it depends on how you want to fight that case.
If the listening audience and Elliot, you give me a chance, Barbara Swans, I have to raise this question, because how does the Dred Scott decision fall into that? Because isn't that...
It says the Supreme Court was in violation of its own constitution and thus is guilty of the crime against humanity.
Let me go back to 404 and see if they're there. Let's go to 404. Are you there?
Hello, can you hear me?
I can hear you now. What's your name, brother?
Yeah, my name is Lamont.
Okay, go ahead, Lamont.
I just wanted to just soak it all up, so I'm just listening in.
Do you have anything you want to add, Lamont?
Oh, man, it's pretty heavy and overwhelming.
Give me something, Lamont.
Say that again.
Come on, Brother Lamont.
Give me something,
Lamont.
What I
mean by that is I'm not saying I have something overwhelming to say. I'm just saying that the conversation is heavy for me, overwhelming, that I haven't even gotten to a point where I can piece anything together yet. I'm just processing it all in. But I will say that I appreciate how you put forward that like music and art and things like that is not culture, but that it's really just
a tool
that you use to express your culture. So, you know, I'm going to always remember that. And I guess I'm going to get into a habit of saying that when someone's food or clothing or music is a certain way, I would say that they are practicing. That's a cultural practice.
Right.
But that is not their culture in per se.
Right. Those are tools of culture that teaches you how to practice it.
That's one thing that really stuck out in my mind right there.
Lamont, don't be a stranger, man.
Say that again?
I said, Lamont, don't be a stranger.
All right. All right.
Peace.
Peace.
I want to play this clip. We got a couple other callers, but I'll get right to you. I want to play this clip of Barbara Smalls in reference to the comments you was making earlier about things that we need to do to bind ourselves together as people. One of the men that was at the 10,000 men gathering down there with you, Baba Buntu from South Africa, made a couple of comments that I put some snippets together on, and I want to play them for our listening audience and get your comments on them, Baba Smalls. If I can pull these things up here. Hold on 1 second. I guess I'll play them back to back if I can find them here. I got them somewhere on this. Let me play this one.
As Winston Churchill, we have seen him as Charles Darwin, we have seen him as Jan van Riebeck, as Verwoerd, as Botha. We have seen him as Winston Churchill. We have seen him as Charles Darwin. We have seen him as Jan van Riebeck, as Verwoerd, as Botha, as Ian Smith, as Cecil Rhodes, and thousands of other racist, bigoted, useless people that have created pain in this world. And we are saying we have absolutely no need for you. And coming from a country that Trump has called a shithole, let's see what happens when people from a shithole actually stand up. Let's see what happens. Sisters and brothers, I'm here to just give you a quick solidarity message. The continent sees you. The continent sees you. I have been given numerous messages to share with you as sisters and brothers, not as Americans, not as Westerners, not as people who are removed from the continent. As people who belong to the continent is calling out for you. You need to come back and reunite with the spirits that you come from as your origin. We need you. You need us. We need to be one people. Black power. Black power. Thank you so much.
Let me play this other one, and then I'll get to comments, Professor Smalls.
I think I need to start by saying that I can't really answer it necessarily from this side of the world. I know that part of this discussion is also in line with what many black nationalists have discussed from this part of the world, where the black people in this part of the world should form a nation state here. I think my point is, I think we need to remember where people were stolen from. It wouldn't really make sense. I can't really make sense of it in my mind why people would spend a lot of resources trying to rearrange a part of the earth where they were stolen to make it their own. It just doesn't make sense to me. Maybe it does to others, and I'll learn from them. But I think what we really need is to re-empower this beautiful continent that we already have, and that so many forces in the world want to exploit, want to own, want to invade, want to steal from, kidnap and kill. And I need for you to not see yourselves as people who are just sitting far away from the continent. You are also the continent. Repatriation is a must. It's part of the, and I hope this is going to come up strongly on Sunday when we talk about what we need to do in terms of reparations and our collective justice. But we need you to see yourselves as part of the continent. You don't have to wait for permission. I've heard people in the diaspora say, well, I traveled to Africa and nobody really recognized me. They just saw me as an American. I understand that is painful. I completely understand that on a personal level. But that doesn't mean then you're not an African, because some people who are also designed to not see this Pan-African world that we're building as a just world, then you're going to use that for your own definition and say, well, that means I'm not African. You take a position. You take a stand. And I think there's room, there's need, and there's possibilities in Africa that we need to develop together. So I want to invite every person of Africa, every person whose blood of Africa runs through their veins, to look home at least first. I'm sure as the original people of this world, we should probably own everywhere. But can we at least start where we already have a stronghold, where we already have natural resources that we need to learn how to make them work for us? So please make sure that you always have a travel budget. You always have that account. You put $5, you put $10, you put $20. For some of you, it's going to take a year. For some of you, it's going to take 10 years. But eventually, you're going to have to find yourself on African soil, because it is yours. So claim it. That's my message.
Dr. Smalls, Baba Buntu made two comments there that I played clips of that in his mind binds us together. Your thoughts?
Well, let's start with the latter, and then you have to remind me of the early one.
Okay.
I agree with almost everything he said, except you have 80 million people in the United States. You got more in Brazil. You got over 100 million in Brazil, a couple of hundred million in Brazil, scattered across the rest of the Caribbean, another 100 million. They're not going to migrate back to the continent. So how do you constitute yourself an African people where you are and then make the linkages to the continent? Mm-hmm. Some of our new generations, we, as a part of our establishing ourselves, in the same way you see the Jewish people, no matter whether they're imposters or not, the way they can have Israel, and no matter where they live in the world, see themselves as a member of that state, support it, and identify with it without boundaries. That's what we're talking about. That's what Garvey was talking about. That's what Du Bois was talking about. That's what Booker was talking about. And so we need to have a deeper understanding of our peopleness. Don't confuse our location with our peopleness. Because I'm an African wherever I am in the world. and my obligation to Africa cemented in that identity as being an African. You see, okay. And what we need to establish in African America is the sovereignty that comes from owning the land that we're on, controlling the real estate and wholesale businesses on that land, making the civic rules that governs police and other things within that community and in the school districts, et cetera. And we can't do that with the political direction we are going in now. And if we do that, that constitutes us as a nation state within a state, as is all the other ethnic community in America.
Yes.
They're nation states within the greater American state.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a contradiction, just as we are nation states within the greater world community and can still have relationships with other nation states. That's not a contradiction. Where we have failed is in terms of identifying ourselves in a way that it establishes a relationship where I belong to you and you belong to me. We haven't established that. And I declare again, that can only be established through an understanding and a knowing of our history and the experiences that history will teach us about who our friends are and who our enemies are. History will also teach us about the things that are still useful out of history to use today and the things that must be discarded. History will teach us about the things that's in our culture that is useful today and those things in the culture that must be discarded because they're no longer useful, and what are the new things we need to add to our culture that would enhance the fundamental principles that that culture represents today.
Let's go to 602.
Yes, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard and Professor Smalls. This is Marcos calling from Memphis.
How are you, sir?
Yes, Brother Marcos. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right, good brother. You know, I remember you back in the days of Harriet Tubman School with Ilambe Brock. And,
those were the days, brother.
Those were the days, brother. And I'm glad, you know, I'm listening to the ground, and I'm glad that the people moving towards Garveyism, Pan-Africanism, because I remember those lectures when Brother Robert Harris was, you know, used to be in the lectures with Ilambe. And 1 week when Ilambe had a program, the whole auditorium is filled up. And when said, okay, next week the nationalists gonna have the thing, because we were trying to move into Namibia at that time, and you could count the people on your hands. I'm talking from experience that I see myself because I was a part of that movement. So I'm glad to hear that Garveyism is on the rise because that is the solution. But I want to ask you a question because you were talking earlier about our liberal friends.
Mm-hmm.
And I want you to expound a little bit on our liberal friends and how they have destroyed the Garvey movement, destroyed the nationalist movement, the black nationalist movement, and how they continue to destroy, you know, and interfere in our business. If you could just how they use black people as a buffer, these our liberal friends, and I'll hang up and listen, brother. Thank you.
Thank you for your call, Brother Marcus.
Well, thank you, Brother Marcus, but I don't want to change our agenda either. But I would say, to suffice, everybody know who our liberal friends are. They're primary Jewish and other Irish and WASP who operate from a perspective of a liberal left politics in America to embed themselves in the black movement as they did as far back as the Niagara movement,
yes.
The NAACP,
mm-hmm.
and so forth, to subvert our movement.
Yes.
And the reason they were able to subvert our movement, because we have not established an identity that allows us as a people to define our fundamental interests so that we can recognize our friends and our enemies, because our enemies' interest is never our interest. And I don't ascribe to the term of Garveyism. I ascribe to the term of nationalism and Pan-Africanism, of which Garvey was one. because Garvey and Booker T. Washington were very close comrades. And matter of fact, Garvey came over here at the invitation of Mr. Booker, and his initial thing was to come and teach at Tuskegee. But Mr. Booker said, no, you can't bring your teaching out here. This South would destroy you. Booker thought he would be alive for him and Garvey to work their programs together. But, of course, we know Mr. Booker died mysteriously a few months before Mr. Garvey got here. So Mr. Garvey represented a Pan-Africanism that was already happening in North America, that was already happening in Jamaica before Mr. Garvey was born. But he articulated that Africanism in a way that no one had done before him. And one of the things that Tony Martin mentioned in one of his books about the Honorable Messiah Marcus Garvey was that he said when he came here, he came to implement the Tuskegee model. Yet when we discussed Mr. Garvey, we never even referenced Mr. Booker or the Tuskegee model. Most people don't know that Mr. Booker had traveled with W.E.B. Du Bois to England to help set up and organize the first Pan-African conference. But because Booker didn't appear at the conference itself a few years later, people criticized him. But most people didn't know he financed much of what Garvey was doing and used his newspapers, which were the biggest news network in the country until the Honorable Messiah Marcus Garvey opened up the African world, to promote that conference. So we are talking about an Africanism who one of his greatest heroes was Marcus Garvey, not Garveyism. And that Pan-Africanism, which Garvey articulated, was done in such an extraordinary way, it led to such a rapid organization that he mobilized more black people in a shorter period of time than anybody in the history before or since. And so in that sense, we must study Garvey and his methodology. But in studying that methodology, let's not miss out the method of the AME Church, which gave him the fundamental platform to move around this country in such rapidity. And that move was led by an African-American sister named Henrietta Benton Davis, who was one of Garvey's closest comrades. And she, we know her out of Philadelphia. She originally came out of Washington, D.C., but she died in Philly, and where she was a part of the UNIA there in Philly. When Mr. Garvey went to prison, that's the lady who was in charge. But right. The world don't even know it because of our own chauvinism, you see. But not to go off of the path we were on. Again, this speaks to why we must know history and how important history is to inform us on how we must behave in the next second, the next minute, the next hour, the next day, the next week, the next month.
You know, one thing that you raised, Bob Smalls, in the sense as I listen to you and it helps, it shapes my thinking in the sense of that when we talk about peoplehood, we have to also recognize we're talking, as I hear you say regularly, geopolitical understanding of our position, right? And which raises the question of, you know, I always raise with us is, what is our strategic resource? And if we're dealing with peoplehood, and I'm asking you, would you agree with it? And I don't know if I asked you the last time you was there. If we're dealing with our peoplehood, and as you say, how important our history is, it would seem that the strategic resource and our economic wealth base is our person, our human birth.
Personage.
Right. And then the thing of manufacturing that is being able to inculcate that history to make us a people compared to just a population in a place. Right. Would you agree with that formulation as a thought?
I agree with what you just said 100%. And Dr. Asa Hilliard would agree with you as well. Dr. Hilliard taught me that one of the most fundamental things that the white man took away from us is our human beingness. Okay? And in order to restore ourselves as Africans again that can formulate nations again, we must restore our human beingness in order to establish our peopleness.
Yes.
Let's go to 336. 336, what's your name? Where are you calling from?
Yes, my name is Boniswa.
Mm-hmm. How are you?
How are you, brothers?
Good evening, sister. How are you?
Hey. How you doing now?
Professor Smalls, I am so I just love you. I just love you. And a friend of mine called and told me that the show was on, so I came on about 40 minutes ago. So I don't know what information was covered, but I've been listening for the past 40 minutes. And so greetings to the host. I don't know your name.
Elliot.
Okay.
And Richard.
Dr. Rogers referred me to the call.
Okay.
Yes. Great. Yes. So, Professor Smalls, so peace, everybody. Professor Smalls, you will be in my city next week. Greensboro,
yes, ma'am.
Yes,
absolutely.
Yes, I'm a friend of the sister that's inviting you, and this is the ancestors, because I had no idea you were going to be on this call tonight and that I was going to get this message.
Wow.
Minutes ago, yes.
So what's the name of the high school where I'm going to be speaking there on the 28th?
It's Dudley High School in Greensboro, North Carolina.
And our time?
From 4 till 8.
Yes. So everybody who's in the listening audience anywhere close to Greensboro, you need to be there because we're going to be talking about African-American history, and we're honoring a brother who was a musicologist and a band leader there, and so we're going to talk about the relationship of music to our history.
Mm-hmm. Ashe. And more, if possible.
Yes, ma'am.
So, yes, it's Dudley High School again in Greensboro, North Carolina, and we are promoting it throughout North Carolina. We're doing our best to do that. So I just want to make a brief comment about our condition, our psychological condition as a people. Mm-hmm. I've been an organizer, and I come from a place called the East in Brooklyn.
Years. I know the East.
All right, G2AUSI.
G2AUSI, that's my daddy. Okay.
I say. So that's what molded and shaped me. And so I understand black nationalism in a very pragmatic, realistic way.
Mm-hmm.
Because we were building a nation within a nation, and it's the most powerful thing that I've ever done in my life. I've done many things since, but it's the most effective and most powerful. So I see black nationalism as the only way, and Pan-Africanism, that we can resurrect ourselves as a people. But I'm so concerned about the way that we're imploding. So I've been organizing in Greensboro for many years, and up until about 10 years ago, we would come together and do events and make plans, but we never seem to get stuff off the ground. And over the past 10 years or so, there's infighting in every so-called conscious group, Islamic mm-hmm. group. There's just infighting, and I'm not seeing anybody build anything.
Because
and I'm witnessing that and hearing that.
The greater spiritual identity has been lost.
I'm sorry, what'd you say, brother?
The greater spiritual identity that bonds us. That what brothers don't understand, that I can be a Muslim, but I can still be an African. I can be a Hebrew Israelite, but I can be an African. I can be a Baptist, but I can be an African. And so let's define what that African essence is. And we've lost that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And we don't want to be African. I get into debates, and I try not to, but now they don't want to be African. They want to be indigenous, and they want to be whatever. So
right.
How are we going to so some of you also say this. I'm studying and teaching about internalized oppression, you know, the self-hatred and the mm-hmm. learned powerlessness and all those things that we've internalized. I know the part of what's preventing us from actually building something instead of just talking about what we need to do. But I just wanted to mention that how I'm watching us implode, even in our, say, our Kwanzaa 365 groups and, you know, mm-hmm. other nationalist groups, we can't get along.
And a big part of this, my sister, is that the people who are now, and I don't even like the term conscious community, and I don't use it, because the conscious community in most instances is the most unconscious element of the community. And so I don't use that term, because the people that we have articulating so much, thanks to the what's this thing called, the media, the
internet,
social media,
the internet, and all of this new
internet. Mm-hmm.
So you don't have scholars who have studied and learned and been tutored by the Dr. Benz and Dr. Clark types, articulating positions. You have someone who've watched three or four videotapes, a few YouTubes, and read maybe a book, but they're able to use this medium to appear as a scholarship of information. Yet they've not been involved in struggle like you with the East, you know. They're not born of a struggle. They've not participated in any political formulation that would mold your consciousness. But because of the instrument, the new tools of the internet and social media, and this is where most people are getting their information, they appear to be authorities in the subject area they're talking about because it's so easy to give that appearance today with minimum amount of information when you're dealing with a population that have no information at all.
Which I like to ask both of you, is that a generational
it's the new technology. Phenomenon? The new technology. It would have happened 30 years or 40 years ago if we had the same instrument, but we didn't. And so we have to learn on how now that we've got all of these new instruments to identify authentic scholarship and to identify authentic activists based on some history. What is your history? Most of these people's history is a mystery, if you want to make a pun. They have no history in struggle. What organization do you belong to? Most of them are not a part of an organization past a group of 5 or 10 that they've made up.
That's right.
And so we have to examine these things before we give them the credibility that we're giving to them, because they are able to reach millions of people with a Facebook video.
Yep.
You know? And so as long as those of us who come and is born out of struggle and have been participants in struggle, both armed and non-armed, we've got to be able to articulate that we recognize when someone have no experience in struggle and have not been tutored, mentored, or apprenticed under anyone who has.
Can I interject here, Professor?
Yes, ma'am.
Because what you just said, that was going to be another comment I was going to make about doing some very intentional mentoring, just what you just said, apprenticeship, because everything you said was so on point. We have more relationships with a computer than we do with each other. And that's a recipe for disaster. We've got to, I try to organize different things and people don't even want to meet anymore. If you can't have a conference call, they don't want to do it. It's like we can't even sit together anymore.
Right.
So I'm just wondering how we are going to move forward when the basic, you said it, humanness, a belonging to each other, that is just falling away so rapidly. We got to find ways to reclaim that. And
that's where the history comes in. History. And so we need to go back and project the study group as the primary model for studying history, even within the family. That every family should set aside 2 hours a week, whatever day they choose, to study a book or to study a DVD and have a discussion of it within that household. And if you can expand and invite other neighbors who are also doing the same thing, you can then expand the study group model. But we must understand what are the basic history and the basic elements of African-American history. What is the basic history and the basic elements of West African history, East African history, North African history, Central African history? What are the basic elements of our ancient history? So that when we sit down to have a dialogue, we could feel the relationship, because the knowing of that history establishes the relationship.
And sister, listen, before I let you go, I know that you're not, but I'm just saying this, so just bear with me. Don't lose faith, because what you're doing, it might not seem as though it's being received. It's being received. Listen, Dr. Smalls was in Tampa 2 weeks ago when I talked to him. He was in Washington this week. He'll be in Greensboro. He'll be with you next week. So it's people out there doing things. He's on this program now. It's people listening. It's people doing things. Some of our people, they kind of sit back and they listen. But it's people that's going to get involved. So don't lose faith, and I know that you won't.
Thank you so much.
And make sure that you introduce yourself when I get to Greensboro next week. But I really, truly believe that this generation of young people behind us is the best generation we've produced, despite all of the critical issues we're seeing. I see more consciousness in the generation of my children than I saw in our generation. What is missing is the instruments to articulate that level of consciousness.
Mm. You know? Yes. And can I say quickly, I was doing something called, and I'd like to just share this with the listening audience, with some other people, started something called Dinner and Dialogue. And we would fix food for the community and show Hidden Colors, you know, and Black Wall Street and other documentaries to teach our people, because our people love, a certain degree of, if they won't read a book, they will watch a video.
Right.
And that was going beautifully, and people were waking up, and we were developing community, and it fell. So I'm working on reviving that, and Professor Smalls, with you coming here, I'm going to use that as a springboard to revive some of what we were doing.
Yes, and I'm going to speak to some of that, because I agree to that model. I think that's a good model. And sometimes, people get it can get overwhelming after a while, and so you need to take a minute and then regroup. Mm. And a large part of what we should have at the end of the day is discussion, so you can hear what people are receiving, because everybody's receiving differently and in different amounts. And so this information can be overwhelming, because what it'll demand is change, and a lot of people are not ready for that change, or they don't know how to go through the change. Because it is transforming, as all information is.
Sister, thank you for your call.
I'm looking forward to, believe me, I'll be the first one at your feet when you come to North Carolina.
I'm looking forward to being there.
Thank you.
Okay. And give my love to Sister Sylvia.
I will.
Thank you for your call, sister.
Okay. Odabo.
Odabo.
We're going to take a brief break. Dr. Smalls, how's your time? You all right?
Yes, sir. I'm good. I'm getting tired.
Good.
Well, I'm good.
We ain't going to go too much longer. But
my grandson was 5 years old today, and we had a little birthday party for him.
They wore you out, huh?
Yeah.
Well, we're going to take a little brief break. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation for at least another 30 minutes. You can get involved, too, by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We got a call on hold, and we'll get to them right after the break. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before you
your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
I think you'll find, sir, that there will come a time when black people wake up and become intellectually independent enough to think for themselves as other humans are intellectually independent enough to think for themselves, then the black man will think like a black man, and he will feel for other black people. And this new thinking and feeling will cause black people to stick together. And then at that point, you'll have a situation where when you attack one black man, you are attacking all black men. And this type of black thinking will cause all black people to stick together. And this type of thinking also will bring an end to the brutality inflicted upon black people by white people. And it is the only thing that will bring an end to it. No federal court, state court, or city court will bring an end to it. It's something that the black man has to bring an end to himself.
Preachers and leaders, you administrators, you teachers, you leaders, you are the worst. No cowardly, punctified leader will lead this new generation of young black men and women. Your day of leading them is finished. You can't feel it? When you talk to young people, you can't feel that you're missing them? Parents, you can't feel when you're talking to your children that this is a new generation and they don't want to hear your compromising talk? Did you hear them in Ferguson tell Jesse, get the hell out of here? You ain't no leader. I was hurting for my brother because Jesse worked hard for our people. But time has moved on. And what was good yesterday ain't no good at all today. So either you become a new vessel so that new wine can be poured into the old wine. For your day of leading our people is over, and it will never come back to you again. Damn it, we're still in the land of our bondage. We're still in the land of captivity. We're still a slave to the Democratic Party. Still a slave to the Republican Party. You can't even see a Freedom Party. You don't see it. You're a slave. I'm a slave. And unless we admit that we are slaves, then we can never get free. Never get free.
Put the present Democratic administration in Washington, D.C. The whites were evenly divided. It was the fact that you threw 80% of your votes behind the Democrats that put the Democrats in the White House. When you see this, you can see that the Negro vote is the key factor. And despite the fact that you are in a position to be the determining factor, what do you get out of it? The Democrats have been in Washington, D.C. only because of the Negro vote. They've been down there 4 years, and all other legislation they wanted to bring up, they brought it up and gotten it out of the way, and now they bring up you. And now they bring up you. You put them first, and they put you last, because you're a chump. A political chump.
So you could see that the government of America has been planning our demise. Any members of Congress here, any members of the civil rights movement that are here, you love this nation. You've suffered every indignity to make America better, that she might be great. And every time you forced her to make a law that was in our favor, they came right behind that law with skill and chicanery to make the law of non-effect.
When it came to treating the citizens of African descent fairly, America failed. She put them in chains. The government put them on slave quarters, put them on auction blocks, put them in cotton fields, put them in inferior schools, put them in substandard housing, put them in scientific experiments, put them in the lowest paying jobs, put them outside the equal protection of the law, kept them out of their racist bastions of higher education, and locked them into positions of hopelessness and helplessness. The government gives them the drugs, builds bigger prisons, passes a three-strike law, and then wants us to sing God Bless America? No, no, no. Not God Bless America. God damn America. That's in the Bible for killing innocent people. God damn America for treating her citizens as less than human. God damn America, as long as she tries to act like she is God and she is supreme.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening, and we're joined in conversation this evening with activist, Pan-African scholar, Professor James Smalls is with us this evening. And we'll go right back to the phones. We got a call waiting. 931-931. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hey, my name is Wayne. I'm calling from Tennessee.
How are you, Wayne?
I'm great. Say hello to you, the host, Mr. Elliott, and your co-host, Richard. And
how you
my
doing?
Homeboy, Mr. Professor James Smalls.
Yeah. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing fine, serving Myrtle Beach. I know you're from Georgetown, so I just wanted to say hello. First time caller, long time listener. And so off the bat, let you know that I got a lot to learn. I'm listening to every show, every Sunday. I'm tuned in. Yes, I am.
That's a good thing, brother, because that's what will make us better activists in our community by being better informed.
Yes, sir. I just want to put that in. I don't hold your guys up. Now you got more callers waiting, so I just want to put that shout out to you, especially you, Mr. Professor James Smalls.
Well, I appreciate
it.
I count Myrtle Beach as being a part of my home. You know, a lot of my family is in Myrtle Beach.
Yeah, so a lot of my family's in Georgetown on Church Street, matter of fact.
All right.
Okay. All right, Dan, I'm going to go get out this telly and let y'all go ahead and continue on so I continue to listen till the end of this show.
Okay, my brother.
Thank you for your call, brother.
Peace and blessings.
All right.
Peace.
Dr. Smalls, before you leave us, I want to touch on the politics of the matter and politics in general. Our people caught up in chasing this Democrat. Well, they don't bother too much with Republicans, but this chasing this system that is used to govern this system of white supremacy that we live under. Cynthia McKinney was with us about 3 months ago, and she made reference to, and I want you to expound on this because I saw it in one of your YouTube clips. She made reference to Hillary Clinton and the faction of Jewish interests that was pushing Hillary Clinton, and also Donald Trump and the other faction of Jewish interests that was behind Trump. She encouraged the listening audience to check out a video by the Irritated Genie called The Secret Relationship Between Blacks and Small Hats. And she talked about that relationship and how they've been using black people and playing them as pawns, especially in the Democratic Party. Talk about that from your perspective. Go ahead.
That's been the relationship. I remember when I first joined the OAAU, Malcolm's organization. And Malcolm's sister Ella told me that the Jews had bought us in 1913 from the WASP. I go, what are you talking about? You know, in 1913, they bought access to us, you know, so that they would keep us from being a harm to the status quo. And then they would be able to use us to advance their political interests. And we've seen that throughout the history of our involvement in the Democratic Party. And when we saw Barack Obama get elected, we saw lines quadruple at polling places like they'd never had in the history of America across the nation in the black community. Yet the media, which is predominantly controlled by our Jewish comrades and friends, have never said it was the black community that elected Barack Obama.
Mm-hmm.
They say it's the woman vote, it's the Hispanic vote, it's the gay vote. The truth is, it was the African-American vote. And they thought they had captured the African-American youth vote and that would propel Hillary in, but the African-American youth felt betrayed after 8 years and not having their agenda addressed. They didn't go back to the polls in the numbers they did for Barack twice.
Mm-hmm.
And they gambled that they had this generation bamboozled, and they lost. If you look at the music industry and you look at the movie industry where we are concerned, there's one ethnic group dominating and making the primary money off of the black community. If you look at the blacks in athletics, the people who are managing them and are their agent, it's the same one ethnic group controlling them. So this one ethnic group makes billions off of black athletes, black music, black movies, and have been doing it for decades. Just get that line up straight. If you come to our communities, the so-called inner city ghettos, up until the last 10 to 15 years, the predominant retailer in those communities were primarily Jewish across the country. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
If you go to the inner major cities, Los Angeles, San Francisco, and New York, where city universities, city-run universities and colleges exist, and blacks are majority in those areas, again, you find those institutions being controlled by the Jewish community and using us to educate their population while at the same time excluding our population. Just want to get that in. Then we get back to the Democratic Party. Where they're a minority, and we are a majority, and yet they're controlling the central committee of that party. How could that be? If our numbers are so much greater than them, how can they have so many members of their community in Congress, many of them coming from communities that border on or are actually black communities across the country? And yet they deliver nothing to us. Matter of fact, they deliver policy that is destructive to the black American community. So I don't like giving that much energy to my enemy. I want to spend time talking about what we're going to do, no matter who the enemy is. And the first thing we have to do is learn how to define our enemy. And the best thing to do that is to study our history.
There you go.
Okay.
Go back to 1892. T. Thomas Fortune.
There you go.
All right. And see the formulation of an organization called the Afro-American League.
Okay.
There you go.
It is the Afro-American League that morphs into the Niagara Movement. People talk about the Niagara Movement, but never talk about it being given birth to by the Afro-American League, which has as many women in it as it does black men. And then the sabotaging of the Niagara Movement by this so-called white liberal coming to give assistance in the formation of what becomes the NAACP, which is predominantly led by whites until the 1970s, to get laws passed in this country, in the South, that gave the Jews and access to the South that they had never had before in history. The laws we call the civil rights laws, yes. They may have offered us access, but it gave them access.
And truly integrated them.
Absolutely. The Zionist money bottled up in the Northeast and in the Chicago area was able to expand throughout the South in a way it never had as a result of civil rights legislation. So we were used and played out of pocket. And the same people who were supposed to be our allies became the very group that helped control and limit our access to power and economics in the greater system.
If I may, because you raised the OAAU, what are your thoughts of those at the AU saying that there was that by 2025 or 2020, we're going to unify the continent? Is that something made for them? Or, what are your thoughts in relationship to that?
Possible. If we change our path, it is possible if the African nation states are able to take control of their natural resources, if they're able to have the courage, the leadership of the African nation states can develop the courage to take the model put forth in Zimbabwe by Mugabe, then yes, we can do it. But if we don't take control of the mines, if we don't take control of the diamond, the gold, the cobalt, the tungsten, and the manganese, et cetera, then no, we won't be able to do it. If the Francophone states, those states in Africa that was once under French colonialism, which is still under French colonialism, stop financing the French government and move the African Reserve Bank from France back to Africa, then we'll be able to do it. If the African nation states like South Africa and as Zimbabwe have done, and Congo also needs to do, take control of our land from the white miners, the multinational corporation, take control of our farmland back. Nobody sold it to those people. They stole it. We don't have to pay them a dime to take it back. If we could do that, and any contract that was negotiated before last week need to be discarded and renegotiated because they were all negotiated under duress or colonialism, then we could do it. Short of those things, we're going to have a problem meeting those deadlines.
And, you know, the thing that disappoints me is the when Haiti asked to be entered into the AU and they denied them.
Yeah, they denied them because France and America put that kind of pressure. And for them to be weak enough to be pressured by poor European country who they're giving aid to and allowing themselves to be semantically bamboozled to think that those countries that they're giving billions of dollars of aid to, who are offering them a few millions back of their billions as giving aid to them, then we see how lost we are in terms of consciousness. It means the leaders of Africa do not have a true understanding of history or little or any knowledge of history of their own people and their own lives. Until we get history straight, we will not be able to get our relationships to our enemies and our friends straight.
Dr. Smalls, you mentioned Zimbabwe, and you see now that, some of that thinking is spilling over into South Africa what they're trying to do. But is it disheartening when you see the development in Ghana? And I know that you're in that situation, so you're close to that situation, so you might be able to speak to it better than any of us. When you see that the deal that they made with the United States as far as allowing them access and putting bases there, when you see that, is it disheartening to see that type of development?
It's very disheartening. I had thought this president would be stronger, but no one man runs a country, so there's all of the others around him, the black elite in Ghana, and their supporters, the banking system, the IMF, and the International Monetary Fund, all of them were in place to put pressure on this president and to go along with this agreement. Now, this is not a new agreement. This is like about the fourth time that this agreement is being renewed. So that needs to be said, because he tried to explain that later. But he didn't have to renew it.
Right.
The $20 million that America is supposedly giving to help upgrade their security apparatus is worthless. What can they do with that? You buy a few cars and that shit is gone. So that doesn't make any sense. But I think there was pressure put on by the World Bank. There was pressure put on by the International Monetary Fund. There was pressure put on by the Ghana black elite and bankers who are profiting from their relationships with America. And I think he was forced into that position. And all that has occurred is they have simply open the country up further to American intelligence manipulation of the lives of the people economically, politically, and culturally. And that does not bid good for a progressive Ghana going into a rapid self-development.
And that's why it's so important what you say as far as our peoplehood, because the moral imperative that American Africans or African Americans can make in relationship to these foreign policies as it relates to Africa, we could have influence if we operate as a people and not just, be moving.
As a few individuals trying to make some money with some investment.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I suggest that everyone should go back to the big new Brzezinski white paper under the Jimmy Carter administration.
There you go.
Where he says that the primary objective of American foreign policy with Africa, where African Americans were concerned, was to make sure that African Americans and Africans develop no political, economic, or cultural relationship of any significance. Mm-hmm. That was the policy and still is the policy of the government of the United States.
Mm. Now, you know.
And Jimmy Carter was one of those supposed to be a liberal president.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, you just repeated that, Dr. Smalls, but when you see, it's disheartening to me, although I kind of, you know, listen, I know where these folks are, but it's disheartening mm-hmm. to me when you see black so-called elected officials that's supposed to work in the interest of black people go along with that policy that you just stated. Because mm-hmm. they know that this is wrong. Even though if they can go home and look in the mirror and see themselves as black, look at their families, they know that working along against the best interests of the majority of black people is wrong, but they do it.
But they do it every day. But while I was in Tampa, I raised it. And while I was in Washington this week, I raised it. And I've raised it many times through the years. One of the big mistakes, those of us who are nationalists, I didn't make it because I voted in every election in my community since I was 18 years old. And I helped, along with other brothers and sisters, set up two political clubs in Harlem over the years. We even forced Charlie Rangel's club, the Martin Luther King Club, to give us 50% and the vice presidency of their political club at one point in history. And so one of the mistakes those of us who say we Pan-Africanists and nationalists make, we didn't listen to Malcolm well. He didn't say the bullet. He said the ballot or the bullet. But we kept screaming for the bullet, which we didn't have any of. And we never used the ballot, which was available for our use. And so those elements of the community that did not have the best interests of the community at heart or did not have the proper ideology to have the community's best interests at heart ends up getting elected because we are not participated in the electoral process. The electoral process is another political means to gain power in the black community. And that's why Malcolm said it's going to be the ballot or the bullet. But we haven't tried the ballot. We, meaning those who are Pan-Africanists and nationalists, and yet we'll say we've listened to Malcolm. Mm-hmm. We haven't really listened to Malcolm because we would have known that Malcolm, while he was still in the nation, was working with the Freedom Now Party, trying to use the ballot to gain power in the black community. And when he articulated the ballot or the bullet, he articulated just that. It's going to either be the ballot. If you deny us the ballot, then we will turn to the bullet. But we weren't denied the ballot, and yet we're not using it. And I contend that if more people who say they're Pan-Africanists and nationalists would run for political office, we would see more of us getting elected to those offices, and we'll see a change in the type of leadership coming out of the black community.
Listen, I agree with that whole. Go ahead, Richard.
Yeah, I was just going to say, and that process helps us be able to use it as an organizing tool in our area. We call it the street level or the precinct level or uh-huh. the district level. I mean, that's what you need, organizers on the street, people who are close to the people.
Yes, sir. And there's nobody. That ballot process. Yeah. Who's better structured at organizing the street than these political parties, okay? Because mm-hmm. they organize building by building, block by block, neighborhood by neighborhood. And if we were to learn that strategy, even study the strategies of the Jehovah's Witness, which I always talk about, study the mm-hmm. strategy of the Democratic Party and the Republican Party and how they structure block organizations and building organizations to get out the vote, if we would take a lesson from that as Pan-Africanists and nationalists, we can organize our community overnight.
Right. You know, listen, I agree wholeheartedly with your comments, Professor Smalls. We've had several different folks on here that have independent black parties. Omar Ali Eshetele with the Black is Back party. Zaki Baruti with the Universal African People's Organization. Professor James Klingman and Amafika Gayuka with 1 million conscious and conscientious black voters and contributors. It's folks out here that are organizing independent black parties to divert but some if, of this money.
If, brother, if the independent black parties
go ahead.
Is too extreme for the consciousness of our people, then let's take over the local Democratic Party and turn them into the our independent black party.
Right. Okay.
Right.
Okay. By any means
necessary. Okay.
Malcolm said any means necessary, and we reduced that to one means only. He said by any means necessary. We need to understand what any, A-N-Y, really means.
Yes, sir.
But I want to get, there's one thing, if you, brother, would permit me to get in. I'm going to be in Washington, D.C. On Mother's Day, and I really want to give a shout-out to that lecture down there.
Go ahead, Dr. Zoll.
And it's going to be the title is The Black Queen Mothers, and my presentation is going to be called The Phenomenal Black Woman from Ancient Times to Today. And that's going to be Sunday, May 13th. Oh, wow, I lost it. But it's going to be Sunday, May 13th from 3 p.m. until 7 p.m. at the Birchwood Community Center, 1331 Fenwood Avenue in Oxon Hill, Maryland. That's 1331 Fenwood Avenue, Oxon Hill, Maryland, and it's going to be called The Phenomenal Black Woman, and you're going to love this piece. I've got a presentation of 50 black women and their history from ancient Kemet to Michelle Obama, you know, and it's going to be a nice, you know, a nice, nice presentation about our queen mothers and about our mothers in general. So that we can really see from what we came.
Who's the organizer, Dr. Small? Do you have that offhand?
Yes, sir. This is Positive Comedic Visions.
Okay.
Positive Comedic Visions. And it's a celebration of our black queen mothers.
All right. Okay. All right.
So we can come back. I just didn't want to miss that because I want people to know that's happening on the 13th of May. At 3 p.m. to 7 p.m., 1331 Fenwood Avenue in Ox Hill, Maryland. So come and hang out with us. Let's enjoy talking about that womb that brought us into being.
Yeah, Brother Cush and his organization is always putting
yes,
things forth out there. You know, that's part of that network of think tanks that we need to develop. And, you know, we need to start utilizing, and I'm just kind of on the soapbox again, I think that we need to start utilizing our churches, these temples and
absolutely.
Mosques as educational. That's how it started when our people got out of the chattel enslavement and started mass producing, so to speak, a lot of these church organizations. That's what they were used for early on, Dr. Small.
That was our political organization. That was our political party. That was our revolutionary arc. And we've allowed it to be taken away by those who have lost their way. And if you hear me in most of my speeches, I say one thing that's wrong with the Nassus and Pan-African community, we do not have a relationship or an appeal to the 90% of black people who are in the churches.
Mm-hmm.
So who are we going to organize?
Dr. Smalls, I'm glad to have you with us. You spent 2 hours, and I know that your grandson and your loved ones, they want to get you back there before it's time for you to turn in. But I'm glad that you spent some time with us this evening, and always looking forward to you coming back.
Brothers, I enjoyed being with you. I enjoyed talking with my community and just sharing me and my little understanding and hope that it helps our greater understanding as we try to liberate ourselves and our people across the world. And thank you, brothers, for the work you're doing and creating this forum in order to spread this knowledge.
Thank you, Dr. Smalls, and looking forward to you being back.
Yes, sir.
Take care, man.
We'll take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll start winding things down.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services if when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
New age is upon us, and yet the past refuses to rest in its shallow grave. For those who hide behind the false image of the Son of Man shall stand before God, 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 God.
Has begun the beginning of the end.
Voice of racism preaching the gospel is devilish. A fake church called the Prophet Muhammad a terrorist. Forgetting God is not religion, but a spiritual bond. And Jesus is the most quoted prophet in the Quran. They bombed innocent people trying to murder Saddam. When you gave them those chemical weapons to go to war with Iran. This is the information that they hold back from Peter Jennings. Cause Condoleezza Rice is just a new age Sally Hemings. I break it down with critical language and spiritual anguish. The Judas I hang with. The guilt of betraying Christ, who murdered him, stole his religion, and painted him white. Translated in psychologically tainted philosophy, conservative political right-wing ideology. Glued together sloppily, the blasphemy of a nation. Got my back to the wall, cause I'm facing assassination. Guantanamo Bay, federal incarceration. How could this be? The land of the free, home of the brave, indigenous Holocaust, and the home of the slaves. Corporate America, dancing offbeat to the rhythm. You really think this country never sponsored terrorism? Human rights violations, we continue the saga. El Salvador and the Contras and Nicaragua. And on top of that, you still want to take me to prison just because I won't trade humanity for patriotism. It's like MK Ultra controlling your brain, suggestive thinking, causing your perspective to change. They want to rearrange the whole point of view of the ghetto. The fourth branch of the government wants us to settle. A bandana full of glittering generality, fighting for freedom and fighting terror. But what's reality? Read about the history of the place that we live in, and stop letting corporate news tell lies to your children. Flow like the blood of Abraham through the Jews and the Arabs, broken apart like a woman's heart, abused in a marriage, the brink of holy war, bottled up like a miscarriage. Embedded correspondents don't tell the source of the tension, and they refuse to even mention European intervention or the massacres in Jenin. The innocent screams, U.S. manufactured missiles and M16s, weapon contracts and corrupted American dreams. Media censorship blocking out the video screens. A continent of oil kingdoms bought for a bargain. Democracy is just a word when the people are starving. The average citizen made to be blind to the reason. A desert full of genocide where the bodies are freezing, and the world doesn't believe that you're fighting for freedom, cause you fucked the Middle East and gave birth to a demon. It's open season with the CIA bugging my crib, trapped in a ghetto region like a Palestinian kid, where nobody gives a fuck whether you die or you live. I'm trying to give the truth, and I know the price is my life, but when I'm gone, they'll sing a song about immortal technique, who beheaded the president and the princes and sheiks. You don't give a fuck about us. I can see through your facade like a fallen angel standing in the presence of God. Bitch niggas scared of the truth when it looks at you hard. It's like MK Ultra controlling your brain. Suggestive thinking causing your perspective to change. They want to rearrange the whole point of view in the ghetto. The fourth branch of the government want us to settle. A bandana full of glittering generality, fighting for freedom and fighting terror. But what's reality? Martial law is coming soon to the hood to kill you while you hanging your flag out your project window.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. Again, I want to thank our guest that was with us this evening. Spent quite a bit of time, Richard, Pan-Africanist, activist,
yeah.
Professor James Smalls is with us. Values to move our people forward, cultural, political, and economics. It was an interesting conversation. It's always interesting when he comes here because he's got a wealth of information. Decades out here speaking truth to power. So, you know, I just love it. The people respond. So what can you say, Richard?
It's definitely for me. I mean, you know, and I apologize to the listening audience because I take it personal. You know that we use this platform to continuously to learn, right? And Robert Smalls, you know, you see, it's amazing when we have that person amongst us who has that wealth of experience and knowledge that, and is in such a demand that we keep them moving. I mean, one, that he has the tenacity to keep moving. I mean, like I'm here. I didn't know he was in all these different cities and still coming up, because we're always needing to be fed, informed, helping us, you know, sharpen our analysis, our critical thinking, and you know, so it's in the way he does it. You know, as one caller said, it's always been in that calm, clear, but precise, strong delivery as far as making us understand. The most critical part is that we're moving from being a population, as I call it, to a people. And the necessity of history, as Baba Clark said, John Henry Clark said, the importance of history.
Yeah, well, you know, all of these things, it's part of what we need to do, Richard, whether on this program where we dispense information, expose the listening audience to people that are out there doing things. All of this is part of the dynamic that we must accomplish, because the powers that be, Robert Smalls talked about them earlier, Jewish friends, it's supposed to be friends of the black community, all of these things, that law that the Clintons passed, that Telecommunications Act, I think it was in 94 or 96, cut the legs out from a lot of terrestrial black radio stations across this country and able some of these conglomerates to buy them up. And then when they did, they changed a lot of the dialogue in a lot of these cities to, you know, what we see now. You can almost go to every black urban area and hear all kind of laughing and joking 6 days a week with either Steve Harvey, Tom Joyner, or whoever else that is a Steve Harvey and Tom Joyner clone that gets on there with all types of satires and laughing and joking. I mean, our people are in distress, getting gunned down. Either they're getting gunned down by ignorant people in our own neighborhoods holding a neighborhood as hostage or under siege, or you're getting gunned down by these cops, the police state. You know, our people are in dire straits. And, you know, what the hell? All this giggling and laughing 6 days a week, Richard?
Mm.
But that's what they put forth to us, and some of our people accept it. But you ain't going to hear no giggling and laughing on Time for Awakening unless you tell a joke, Richard.
Don't even start that. other than me being the joke. But no, it's, you know, the information, disseminating information, I mean, it's like really critical. And I think it was important for him to say that last piece about, you know, being clear what Malcolm said about the ballot and the bullet on one hand, you know, the politicalization and the nationalist, and what he said in the beginning, that, you know, being able to approach our diversity, accept, and then being able to approach our diversity and recognizing we have to negotiate with each other. We can't sermonize. We can't, you know, we have to negotiate that we have the same goal. And the only way we can do that is by looking at the history, our history. Our history is our common factor, and it is our humanizing factor.
And it's going to take skillful people to do that, Richard. That's a skill, mm-hmm. man. You know, I mentioned it to Dr. Smalls when he was on, when he told me that, well, we knew that he was going to be speaking down there when Malik Zulu Shabazz was on the program. But, you know, him being able to bring all of those different factions, whether it was Cornel West, Malcolm's daughter, the brother from South Africa that came mm-hmm. here with the message from the continent, a couple of Baptist ministers. I mean, he had a cross-section of people involved in that movement down there for 5 days.
Right.
So that showed some type of skill to be able to organize these people. A man that had all kind of bad labels put on him by Jewish organizations, ADL or whoever else, Southern Poverty Law Center, whatever, labeling him a terrorist or domestic terrorist or Pan-Africanist or a Muslim. But he was able mm-hmm. to bring a lot of people from a cross-section together. And that's happening in a lot of different places. You have a lot of folks, and some of them have been on our program, that are able to bring these people to the table. Where, you know, because to polarize in our community, we can't come together like that. I can't come together if I'm a Baptist and I don't want to be sitting with you. You're a Muslim. I don't want to be sitting with you. You're a Hebrew Israelite. I'm going to sit with other Baptists. In fact, other Baptists ain't even going to sit together.
Mm. That's what he said.
We have to realize a lot of this stuff have polarized our communities. And until we look at our situation critically and start analyzing not only our situation, but who's our friends and who's our enemies, then we're not going to be able to come up with solutions. But the good thing about it is the solutions are happening right before our eyes. We got time for one more call, Richard.
Yeah,
got a call on hold. Let me go to that 215.
Hey, brother Elliot, how you doing?
How are you, sir?
Hey, fine. Hey, brother Richard, how you doing, my brother?
All right now.
Praise be to Allah. Yeah, enjoyed the interview with Professor Small. You know, I just sat back and listened. And I didn't know he had organized the event, like you said, with all these, you know, esteemed people.
He didn't organize it. That was in fact, you probably heard the program Malik Zulu Shabazz was on. That was the function that he was at.
Oh, he was there at the. Okay, I got
for 5 days. Yeah.
Okay, cool. That's good, man. That's great. Yeah, I just want to share a couple of things real quick. You know, I listened to the to the song you played right on the interlude, and like the brother was saying about the United States doing the rap, you know, that's what you call the, you know, it's that kind of rap. The white, the Jewish people, the Zionists, even the Negroes, the misguided Negroes, you notice, Elliot and Rich, they don't promote that kind of rap. Because when the brother said, when he just moved on the part where he said about they don't give a F if a Palestinian child lives or dies, mm-hmm. the clip. And then he also said about how the United States, they cost it down with the chemical weapons, but they gave them weapons to fight against Iran. You know what I mean? So that's why mm-hmm. I say, any black person or anybody got any sense in this country, you know how deep is the white man, and they going to tell you how bad Saddam Hussein is and was and this and that, but yet he was their boy when they wanted him to fight against a fellow Islamic nation in Iran. They gave him all the weapons they wanted and stuff, I mean, so he could fight against Iran. These crackers are something else with their hypocrisy, man. I mean, George Bush, Reagan, all them sitting up there with Saddam Hussein, he their boy, Dick Cheney, all them devils, but some he get too big for his britches, all of a sudden he's a terrorist, he's a bad guy, you know? And these dumb white folks in this country, they so gullible, they go for the okey-doke, so they ready to send their sons and daughters over there. They get blown away or come back, you know, all messed up mentally and physically, and then a dumb white man or woman on TV, yeah, but he died doing what he wanted to do. I'm thanking him for his service and stuff like that. Hey, your son and daughter my cannon fodder for these rich devils who are getting rich and richer while your community's going down. I mean, some of these white folks, man, they stupid. Then some of our people, they just as gullible. They feed that, they pad the same line, thank you for your service, and stuff with black men getting gunned down the street. They was getting gunned down during Iraq war. They It hasn't stopped since then, you know what I mean? So I tell you, man, we just in the, like you said, Elliot, we in dire straits, man. And then, like you say, you got these Negroes with the silliness, the giggling and the laughing at a time when you see down in North Philadelphia last night with a misguided Negro shot up the place and killed the sister and brother down there by 19th and Diamond right near the Church of the Advocate. And of course, with that tragic incident happening, they knocked the white boys right out of the news. The white Jewish fraternity, like I told y'all Friday, was under investigation for raping the white girls. Now, that got knocked right on out of the news now because these Negroes with their foolishness last night that resulted in the death of a black man and black woman. So like you said, if the misguided Negroes that's holding these communities hostage, if we're not killing each other with this foolishness and self-hatred, then you got these racist white cops gunning us down. So like you said, Alec, we don't have time for giggling and laughing, man. Everything has its time and place, but we're in dire straits as a people. Gentrification, everything else, man, we got some serious things to deal with. Like you said, we have to put our serious face on, man, because we face some serious crisis right now. But one thing I don't know if y'all saw this morning, Jay's buddy, Perm Daddy, as he called him, I was watching a little bit of his show this morning. He was, you know, at the National Network, he interviewed Senator Warren, Bernie Sanders, and his other white senator. I forgot her name. Anyway, he interviewed Bernie Sanders, and I was actually shocked, Elliot and Richard. Again, not that I'm putting them up no pedestal, but I thought it was just ironic and stuff. Bernie Sanders, guess who he gave a shout out to this morning? Our mm-hmm. brother Shaway from Jackson, Mississippi, because he was.
Lumumba,
yeah. Bernie mm-hmm. gave him a shout out because what happened was they was talking about the midterms coming up, and you know, of course, Perm Daddy, as Jay would call him. Jay killed me with that name, Perm Daddy. But anyway, Perm Daddy was telling Bernie about, well, you know, the importance of the vote and people got to get out and vote this November. So Bernie Sanders said, well, yeah, he said, Reverend Sharpton, I agree with you on that. He said, but, you know, it's a lot of dissatisfaction in communities around the country, especially African-American communities, with the dissatisfaction. They feel as though that, you know, both parties have been not meeting their needs. I said, a white man got to tell Sharpton that. Well, anyway, mm-hmm. Bernie went on to say that he said that a lot of African-Americans are becoming more sophisticated. They're not going to just vote straight Democrat or blindly vote for Democrat Party if they don't see any, you know, any if they vote, they don't get nothing for their vote. He said, I cite a person like the election of Shawe Amumba down in Jackson, Mississippi. He said, he's a young African American man that got elected mayor. He said, because more African Americans are getting more sophisticated with the vote. He said his victory was a sign to the Democrat Party that, a lot of African Americans just not going to vote for the Okie doke no more. He said, so in the election of Chiwetel Lumumba, it's proof of that. That's what Bernie Sanders told Sharpton. When he said Sharpton.
That's not going to change. That's not going to change how they deal with black folks.
No,
I mean, he can say whatever he want.
Right, but what I'm saying, I was pointing it out. I said that Bernie knows it, and so, but it's a shame that the Al is like he in the dark about things. I mean, because Al, like, he was shocked that Bernie would say that to him. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I'm saying, Al, you should know that yourself. You're supposed to have the pulse of the black community and stuff. You know, I mean, here's a white man like Bernie Sanders. He got more of a pulse than you got. He's supposed to be the brother in the case. You know what I mean? That's the point I'm making, Elliot. You know?
Yeah. Well, politically. Now he might say things on his own in some other instances, but politically he's not going to say anything unless the Democratic Party give him instructions. So things can go on all around him, like the sister that used to be a part of his organization being attacked, and he's not going to say nothing.
In fact, no, you're right. You know,
I think before one of the sisters.
I shouldn't expect Al to send it. If he wasn't going to speak up about the election of Brother Lumumba down in Mississippi, and if, like you said, if he didn't speak up for the sister who's one of his main people, she get attacked by these racist white bigots all over there. He don't open up his damn mouth. Here, Minister Farrakhan, who's a Muslim, and she's not even a member of the Nation of Islam, but she has respect for the minister. The minister came out more strong, supportive of her than Sharpton has. Sharpton, from my recollection, unless I'm wrong, I haven't heard Sharpton in one word of defense, and that's just a defense yet.
He didn't give a word of defense. I think it was... correct me if I'm wrong, Richard, or you might know, Joe. I think it was the secretary in the National Action Network that got sexually assaulted by some Jewish guy. And she, did you remember hearing that, Richard?
No, I remember that, Elliot.
They swept that so far under the rug, and he didn't say anything about it.
Wow. That speaks volumes there. And see, my thing, like I said, with Perm Daddy, and I said this to y'all before about him. See, the guy, like I said, you critique me, and I appreciate what you did, because when I talked about Sharpton about a week or two ago, I said, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, I said, I try to get a brother a little respect only because he has brought attention to a lot of these high-profile cases that wouldn't have been, you know, brought, like I said, when he first came to prominence for the Yusuf Hawkins, when those crackers killed that brother up in Bensonhurst, New York, it was Sharpton stand on the case that brought it to world prominence. But then, Elliot, like you correctly said, and I had to agree, you said, yeah, that's all good and stuff, and we needed him to do that. But like you said, you always be wary of somebody that got the reputation as being an FBI informant, so you always got to look at him for wary eye, and that's true. That's why I say with Sharpton, he's an oxymoron, for lack of a better word, because like I said, he does some good things in the black community, especially bringing attention to these racist police killings and beatings of our people. But at the same time, with his shady record with the government, this so, you know, FBI informant, you definitely have to keep looking at him with a wary eye as well. And then, like I said, too, the thing that's another puzzle with him is this thing with Trump. You know what I mean? They said pictures worth a thousand words, right? Well, the pictures don't lie. I mean, you see Perm Daddy up there with Trump in past years, him and Trump hitting and grinning in Trump's face, and he all lollygagging. Trump got his arm around Sharp, and he got his arm around. I mean, I'm like, dude, what's up with that? Then, you know, of all the places to live, Elliot and Richard, he live in Trump Towers. You know what I mean? I'm saying, why would you want to live in a devil, pay the devil like that rent when stuff, we know how you feel about people that look like you and your people. And don't forget, this is the same Trump that back in the 70s, him and his racist father, was sued by the Justice Department for not wanting to rent for black people in their high-rise apartments up in Manhattan. And these weren't no thug black people. They didn't want to rent. These was black professionals, Ellen and Richard. I'm talking about lawyers, doctors, engineers, you name it, chemists, you name it. But they were him and his racist father. Didn't want to rent to them. But yet, fast forward 40, 50, something almost years later, you living in one of his penthouse suites and stuff, paying his devil rent. So, I mean, so he definitely somebody that you definitely got to be watching to, man. You know, so hey, anyway, with Sharpton, it is what it is with him. You know, so I applaud him for the police things, for bringing attention to these cases while people are brutalized at the hands of the police. But at the same time, his track record definitely is troubling. There's no getting around that. His record is troubling with his FBI connections. And if you ever notice with Sharpton, he claimed to be a civil rights leader, right? But he has never, ever, and again, if I'm wrong, Elliot and Richard, feel free to correct me. I have yet to hear Sharpton speak out against the mistreatment of Palestinian people at the hands of those Zionists over in Israel. I have never yet heard him say any. I mean, even Jesse has criticized that. But I have never heard Sharpton one time speak out on behalf of oppressed Palestinian people over there in the occupied territories. Am I right or wrong?
Well, I've never heard it, no.
I know Sharpton got it. I know them Jews is all up in Sharpton's organization and that stuff. That's why I guess he feels as though he who paid the piper plays the tune. So I guess that's why Sharpton hasn't said anything, because he's scared he's going to get cut off some of them Jewish dollars. So he said he better keep his mouth shut. He better not say a word about that situation. You know, so I mean, people like that, you know, because you always got to watch them, because their track record is very, you know. And then, of course, you got, and I close with these last couple of comments, Ellen Richard. Of course, you've seen this thing up in Tennessee where the brother's a hero, where he stopped the white boy. And I like what the brother said. He said, look, I'm no hero. He said, because, you know, the white boy shot the people up in Tennessee, killed four people. And the brother said, to be honest, I was looking out for my own stuff. He said, the bullet grazed my wrist. He said, so that's why I took action. He said, I grabbed him and I fought him and wrestled the gun out, and the white boy still, you know, he got away and ran out in the woods naked. He ran out in the woods naked. But like the brother said, he said, you know, he was saying to myself, if you're going to take my life, you're going to have to work for it. I'm going to go on out like this. That's why the brother said he went through that bullet graze. And he just said he took on that fight and fan, you know, how they always say,
fight or flight. Mm-hmm.
What's his card?
Fight or flight.
Your fight or flight, exactly. Thanks, Brother Ellen Richard. And that's what the brother said. He said, I realized my life was on the line, so I had to do what I had to do. And so he fought the white boy and got the gun out that crazy cracker's hand and was able to save his life and, I guess, to prevent other deaths and stuff like that. So you see, we live in a nation now where this country's been going crazy. These white boys are crazy as hell. They are mad. Then you got some of our people so messed up, full of self-hatred, as you've seen what happened down in North Philadelphia last night. So we live in a crazy society today, man. These people out here are crazy. Like I said, these drugs is plentiful in the community, the self-hatred, you know, the gentrification. I mean, all these things just, you know, and like you said, LA, our people have never fully got psychological help and stuff in this country, man. I mean, our people have been traumatized for years, and so we crazy as hell, a lot of us, man. And it's almost like Harriet Tubman said, I could have freed more of our people. They knew they were slaves. Well, we are, to a thought, we are, some of us, crazy. We constantly being mistreated. When you see what happened to Starbucks, was just a microcosm of what things happen. I mean, you see this all the time. On any given day, Ellen Rich, I could be downtown just minding my business, walking, taking care of my personal business, and I've got to the point where I'm almost immune to it. I see some white woman in front of me, one or two, and they'll start clutching their pocketbooks. And I've seen cases of Ellen Rich where they'll cross the street. You know what I mean? I just got to the point sometimes where I don't even pay them no mind. You know, sometimes if I'm not as focused as I should and they do it, I'm not going to lie. I'm just speaking to y'all brother to brother. I say, man, I say to myself, I don't say it to them. I just say it to myself. I say, well, go on, cross the street, you little stinking white dude. You hell with you. And that's what I be saying to myself. I just get pissed off. You know, they catch me at a time and space where I might be not in a good mood. I be saying, trying to hurt, see all that nonsense. So they cross the street. I say, go on, take your little white bee behind right, cross the street. But the point I'm saying is that I just done got pretty much immune to it for the most part, because I expected that of them, you know. Every black man is a so-called threat. Now, that white boy that came to the restaurant, they don't look at him as a threat, you know what I mean? And he comes in and kills four people, but you, me, or Richard go in the restaurant, these same white women and white men, and they're looking at us like we're going to do something to them, like what happened to the brothers at Starbucks, you know what I mean? It's just that white psychology, that white sickness among them, you know?
Joe, that incident that happened up there in North Philly, where was that at again?
It's right, from what I heard, Brother Elliot, it was at 19th and Diamond, which is a block up from the Church of the Advocate.
You know,
see, as you know, a lot of the whites, temple students live, they live among the black residents there, you know. And I remember this when I was watching the news earlier today, this brother named Mr. Skinner, you know, that was his name, Mr. Alvin Skinner, was an elderly black man. He lived in the community. He was talking to the Puerto Rican sister on Channel 3, Lisa Nieves, and he told her, he said, look, I have been complaining about this house. He said, these young people be having these wild parties there. He said, I've been complaining to the police and other neighbors that it was something bad was going to happen. He said, unfortunately, he said it happened. I didn't think nothing like this was going to happen, but he said, I had a feeling something bad was going to happen. He said, because they always had these wild parties, they would get out of hand. And so last night, I guess it culminated in this fool coming out of the alleyway, open fire on a bunch of people standing outside the house. And like I said, unfortunately, a sister and a brother got killed. You know what I mean?
You know, but that's that's how it always is, Joe. A lot of this stuff that's happening in our neighborhood, it's one or two houses on a whole block that ruins it for the whole block. But
true.
The solution to these things still comes back to us.
I agree.
These people that's doing this stuff, and you and Richard can attest to it, they're not aliens. They don't come from outer space or from across the shores or another neighborhood. These people that's doing this stuff lives right in the community. Their children, their nephews, their nieces, their sons and daughters mm-hmm. are people that goes to the local churches. Mm-hmm. So when they're having these meetings in the churches, temples, and mosques, these important things have to be discussed. You can't keep spending all of the time talking about people getting on their knees, asking for help, mm-hmm. when you got to help yourself. The Almighty gives you a mind. We're not animals where we need to be taken care of. He gives us a mind to use to come up mm-hmm. with solutions. So we can use our mind to come up with some solutions. This stuff has to be stopped. Sure, we got to stop these Europeans from killing our people, but we got to stop some of these ignorant black folks from all this self-hatred among our own people. Yes. It's got to be stopped.
That's one thing. When we was at the Freedom and Reconstruction League meeting yesterday,
Richard
gave an example of he had said something to a young guy, and he turned around him. I mean, and punched him, broke. He didn't know his jaw was broken. But then another brother gave the example of a movie where somebody, and he didn't know the name of it, where somebody had did something in the community, and one of the brothers was, you know, going to was so upset because it was a family member was going to kill him. But the brothers got together and they talked amongst themselves, and they went and captured the boy, sat him down, you know, slapped him up, told him he's supposed to listen. And they told him they had made a vote. And the vote was, you know, that they let him know that, you know, amongst the group, some wanted to off him right then, but they made a vote that they were going to let him go. He got 24 mm-hmm. hours. But if he was seen the 25th hour, he wouldn't be seen again. And mm-hmm. I thought that was a good example on both sides as far as what you say, Elliot, in relationship. Mm-hmm. when we talk about police in our communities, it doesn't have to be, yes, we're going to have to police our communities against the police, but we're also going to have to control our communities against those individuals that destroying the ability for us to be able to live in a human and in a communal fashion. And well, it's enough of us, Richard, to be able to do that.
It's enough. Yeah, exactly. It's enough of us.
Well, you know, Richard,
you can't have an older man going up to young people by himself, and then,
no.
you know, the young people doing stuff like that to him. You just can't. It's got to be a group of people. You know,
I agree.
You find that a lot of these churches.
Ellie, you got strength in numbers, Elliot.
Yeah, you find mm-hmm. in a lot of these churches, you'll have recovery groups one day at a time or whatever. And if you notice, they have their meetings separate from the church. You know, they might consider them a brother. They look at them as potential members to their church because it might be dollar signs down the line. But they really, and I'm not saying that to cast aspersions, the truth is the light. But they allow them to have their meetings there, certain churches, but they're not really a part of the church. So you get mm-hmm. all types of what they consider undesirables coming into those meetings. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, those people are part of the community. And a lot of the people might have the solution because before they started coming to one day at a time meetings and getting their life together, they was out there on the street with some of them same people doing that foolishness.
Sure, sure.
So and they might have a solution to help people get rid of this type of scourge in our communities. These young people ain't living in a house. Listen, they don't pay no damn taxes and all, so they're not living in a house like you, me, or Richard would live in a house because they ain't paying a damn thing. It's somebody mm-hmm. there paying the bills that owns that property.
You're right, Ellie.
So you might not be able to step to the young people, but step to the ones that it's some adults there that's in some type of leadership, sure. not leadership, but ownership of those properties. It's got to be ways. We just can't live in fear in our own communities anymore.
Well, see, it's like Brother Rob and Sir Richard mixed the reconstructed. I'm glad you attended yesterday, Rich. I forgot they had the meeting. I was so, my mom is, like I had a death in the family. My mom is just on my heart that passed. So I forgot the meeting was, you said it was yesterday, right, Richard?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Yes. I'm gonna try to catch the next one. But anyway, like Brother Rob had told his sister one time, he said, you know, on his neighbor, see, you know, because she still got this brother. Because a lot of these sisters, they, and I love our sisters, but some of these sisters need to know what it, that's why the Nation of Islam had the GGC and the MGT to try to show these sisters how to be good mothers. Not that they didn't say they have to become Muslims necessarily, but just whether you're Muslim, Christian, or atheist, but just how to be a good mother, you know, and raise your children. Because some of these sisters and stuff, they ruin these brothers. They had these, like Ellis said, they live in the house from the dump. These brothers not paying no rentals in a lot of cases. They just sitting there. They
yeah, but I'm not
job,
gonna put it. I ain't putting the weight on no sisters ruining these brothers.
No, I'm not saying on the sisters.
They don't have these babies on their own. It's men involved too.
I'm not saying just the sisters per se. I'm just saying the ones that happen to be in that position where they single and stuff, where they don't have a man, whether the man walked out on them or they walked out on the man, whichever the case may be, because, you know, they say sometimes it's two sides or three sides, his side, her side, and the truth. But what I'm saying, Alan and Richard, is that the sister there with this young boy, he ain't working nowhere. Like I said, he got no job. And yet he's sitting, you know, burning electricity, drinking 40s and weed, and she becoming an enabler. Because instead she is making sure that boy get out there and do something positive with his life, she's letting him lay around all day, listen to rap music, smoking weed. Because Brother Robert had a 6 minute on his clock where he had to tell her, she said, well, you enabling him. He's letting this boy come around all day. She asked the boy to put the trash out. He get an attitude. Yet he's sitting up there eating enough food every day, burning electricity. So you're not, see, you ruin a wife, you ruin a brother like that. You're not teaching them with no kind of, you know, self-esteem to get up and go. All he's doing is enabling him to be a bum, pretty much to be a bum. And again, you're right, Alan, I'm not saying that all of them to sit this case, but because some of these absentee fathers, they need to step up and stuff too. So you're right, it's a multi-complex situation. But I'm just saying, them are some of the things that's plaguing our community and stuff, man, with these sisters and brothers that had these children, they not stepping up to the plate, and that's why they ruin these young people and stuff, man. Because you saw the case when Southwest Philadelphia last week, Richard Nellett, where the brother was out with his child, and the boy shot and shot the boy and his one-year-old baby or whatever like that. Now, you have to be a real mean Negro to do something like that. You see, you know, they said he knew this child was in the car. Now, whatever beef you got with the father, you know, you still knew you could have waited and got this boy by himself and did what you had to do, but you're going to shoot right in the car when you knew this child was in the car. Now, this child, from what I last heard, was fighting for his life. But again, I blame the boy, too, because he had to have some kind of beef with this boy for this boy to want to come back that hard and shoot him like that with this child in the car. So these are some of the things that we got facing our community, this self-hatred and stuff. But I'll close with this, Ellen Richard. And the example you gave, Brother Richard, a few minutes ago is so similar to what Mr. T said. Because, you know, Mr. T, I think he grew up in the Chicago area. He had told a story years ago that they had a thug brother, like, in the neighborhood that was terrorizing the community, that was wreaking havoc. He said that he tried to talk to the brother. The brothers got together because, like you said, Ellie, it's strength in numbers. You don't have to go approach nobody by themselves because, you know, nobody, you know, is Superman or Superwoman. But a group of brothers approached him. They tried to talk to the guy. He was pretty much blew them off. And he was determined he was going to continue to do all that wild stuff, drugs and terrorize the community. Mr. T said in this interview, he said they got that brother. They grabbed him. And so the guy asked Mr. T, well, what happened to the guy? Mr. T said, all I can tell you is that he never was seen again. And so the guy said, would they kill him? And Mr. T said, I didn't say they did. He said, all I'm saying is that he was never seen again. So in other words, you can draw your own conclusion. You know what I'm saying? The guy that was doing, he was never seen again. So you can, again, draw your own conclusion. So that's very similar, Brother Richard, to what you said about the scenario that you painted and stuff. It's going to have to be a group of brothers in these communities that have to step to these fools and let them know that either you're going to live as a decent human being, civilized, or you ain't gonna be around. Simple as that. You're not gonna continue to terrorize our people. I don't care how many damn guns you got. You can't fight, beat the whole community. Either you're gonna ship up, my man, or you're gonna ship out. It's that simple, you know what I mean? We got to start laying down some play hardball with these fools. That is, like you said, Ellie, we can never have true economic development where our children can play outside in a safe zone. You know, because there's no reason why in the summertime, the weather getting warm, that our children can't sit out on the porch and play like children are supposed to play, ball in the streets or whatever. They kids should be out, they should better have parties and enjoy themselves like children are supposed to do without some fear, some fool getting in the beef with somebody, firing bullets up and down a block, hitting an innocent child, innocent man or woman. That stuff shouldn't be happening and shouldn't be allowed to continue to happen. You know what I mean? And it's like you said, it's up to us, Ellie, and Richard, to find solutions where that stuff can be eradicated. And it's because nobody should have to live under those conditions. Nobody. You know?
Thank you for your call, Joe.
Thank you, Brother Elliot. Thank you, Brother Richard.
Richard, we come up on the end of another program, man.
Yeah.
And I want to let everybody know about the lineup tomorrow. Starting out the week, as always, African Perspectives with Brother Oshie. That's Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Midday show, African Perspectives with Brother Oshie. Later on that afternoon, Acres of Diamonds with Brother Jihad Ahmed from 6 to 8 on Time for an Awakening. And from 8 to 9, Let's Buy Black365.com Connect with Sister Nataki and Brother Saba. They'll be on from 8 to 9 on Time for Awakening. Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. He'll be here on Time for Awakening from 8 to 10. On Wednesday, well, it will probably be a tape delay of Revive with Sister POC. She's in Africa. She'll be there for about a month. So I know when she gets back, she'll have a lot to tell her listening audience. But her show is usually from 8 to 10 on Wednesday. Then Friday, Time for Awakening is back Friday from 8 to 10. Saturdays is Sports Day with SST. Saturday Sports Talk with Brother Troy Wilmore from 10 a.m. to 12 noon. That's the lineup, Brother Richard.
Sir.
I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening and also thank our guest, Professor James Smalls. You can catch, if you missed any of it, you can catch it up on podcast on timeforanawakening.com. You can go there, catch the episode, any that you missed, download it or share it with your friends. I want to thank you, thank the listening audience for being with us this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Friday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
Your children playing after school. They seem to be so unaware. I know the things that they'll soon have to take care of.
why can't we do something to try and solve them? To save the children.